All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's call. Today is Monday, October 9, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. Our participant code is 419-303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number, 781-838-3728. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, pick up where we left off, is in Matthew chapter 17. I'm going to be reading verses 1 through 13. Matthew 17, 1 through 13. Okay, after 6 days, Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John, his brother, and bringeth them up into a high mountain apart, and was transfigured before them, and his face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was white as the light. And behold, there appeared unto them Moses and Elijah, talking with him. Then answered Peter and said unto Jesus, Lord, is it good for us to be here? If thou wilt, let us make here 3 tabernacles, one for thee, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. While he yet spake, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and behold, a voice out of the cloud, which said, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear ye him. And when the disciples heard it, they fell on their face, and were sore afraid. And Jesus came and touched them, and said, Arise, and be not afraid. And when they had lifted up their eyes, they saw no man save Jesus only. And as they came down from the mountain, Jesus charged them, saying, Tell the vision to no man until the Son of Man be risen again from the dead. And his disciples asked him, saying, Why then say the scribes that Elijah must first come? And Jesus answered and said unto them, Elijah truly shall first come and restore all things. But I say unto you, that Elijah is come already, and they knew him not, but have done unto him whatsoever they listed. Likewise shall also the Son of Man suffer of them. Then the disciples understood that he spake unto them of John the Baptist. Matthew chapter 17, verses 1 through 13. Okay, let's see. I don't know, do we have any questions? We want to first go into that? Let's go into a subject first. Unless, Jan, you think we should go to something else earlier. Is Jan here? I think Jan. I saw Jan. Yeah, he's there.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, we'll go into Q&A in a minute, into the questions in a minute. By the way, we're in Q&A. If anybody wants to get into the Q&A, star 6. If you want to ask a question, make a comment or whatever, star 6 to get into the Q&A. I think it'll tell you hit star 1 or something after that. All right, we've been working on the Sheriff's Committee project, or the Sheriff's Project, shall I say. And I'm going to share with everyone the front page that I've got together right now for the website. It's not posted yet. I'm just creating these pages and putting them together on Word and bringing files together into folders and preparing so that once the site is up and going, I'll be able to install these things quickly. I should be able to install most of all of the content within a good day or so. So I know Carl may need a couple of more weeks before he gets done with it. I'm sure if he can find time earlier to get to it, he will, but probably looking at least a couple more weeks out. Of course, we're going to wait till the website is up and going before we start our project. The website is the support, the backbone of that project. And, you know, so we'll get started as soon as that's done and up. I think in the next day, maybe two, I will have the entire website completed as far as being on, you know, a program on my computer ready to upload. We'll cut and paste and put it up onto the pages, create the pages and put them up there. Also working on the book, still working on it. I hope to have gotten it done by now, but I've been so overloaded to two major cases I was working on it that consumed huge amounts of time. But I did do some writing on that, and then, of course, I've been developing the website material. But I think maybe by next Monday I'll have the PDF done and going through for spell check and, you know, English and punctuation and so on. Excuse me. So hopefully by next week I'll have that done. We'll start sharing that. But I'm going to share what we do have up ready to go right now. Well, you know, as far as the front page, as I mentioned. And so I posted it up as a PDF up on our website. So if you go to our website and you go to Sheriffs, I like Sheriffs, and come down to the Power of the Sheriff. Okay, just click on the Power of the Sheriff. Come all the way down towards the bottom of the page, and you will find under the videos there, Documents. Down on the bottom of the documents, it's about eight or nine documents, and in the bottom document it says Sheriff's Website, or Sheriff Website. If you want to click on that, you'll be able to look at what I'm going to read. I don't know if I'm going to read it all, but I might. It's time to really get excited about this. This is a very important project. I think we really have to push on this. I really think this is huge. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. It's going to be the subject for tonight as much as possible anyway. But let me read this here. Again, let me tell you where this page is at for anybody that wants to read along. Go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. Highlight Sheriffs. Come down, click on Power of the Sheriff. Come down close to the bottom of the page. You'll see Documents. The last document on the document section says Sheriff Website. Click on that, and you'll have a PDF copy of the front page that we created. Now, we're open for suggestions, corrections, ideas, other ways to make it more powerful. So if anybody's got any ideas, by all means, get the idea to Dan, to Jan. If you got a paragraph or a sentence that you think could be done better, you know, get it to Jan, and you know, Jan and I will review it. And also, you know, any comments at all. Right now on the page we have please donate to the Sheriff's Project. Our goal is $100,000. I think that's probably going to end up being maybe $70,000. If we're really, really lucky, it might even be $60,000 or $65,000. I have to calculate that. We've got a couple ideas on how to really push this along a little quicker, get sort of a good running start. And if we can collect about $10,000 really quick, we can order a whole bunch of booklets. And by the time we get those booklets, we should have more money to be able to start mailing them out. Okay? And if we could do that, then we could really save a lot of money. Because the more money we spend on buying them up front, in other words, the more we buy, the cheaper they are. You know? If we have to buy 300 or 500 at a time, they're going to be pretty expensive. I'd be willing to bet every bit of a buck and a quarter plus each, because they're going to be pretty thick books. But if we could buy them in a large quantity, yeah, I'm thinking maybe we might be spending maybe 60 cents a piece, 50 cents a piece. It's going to be a lot cheaper, better than half that. And so that's the way to do it if we can. So I'm going to have, we're going to need, we figured we got 3,000, well, let's say 3,100 sheriffs, okay, and we want to do 20 books to each, so we're going to need about 60,000. Let me do that again. 3,100 times 20 books each, okay, that's 62,000, so let's say 70,000 books we're going to need. At 70,000 books, if, let's say, 70,000 books times 0.60 cents each, let's say, 70,000 times 0.6. Okay, that's like $42,000. Okay, so the books are going to be quite expensive. And again, you know, maybe 40 cents a piece. I really don't know. But we won't be able to obviously be able to buy 60,000 that quickly then. We're going to have to buy maybe 10,000 or 15,000. You know, we'll see. Now, the idea is this. We want to open this up to for sheriffs and their deputies, free of charge, of course. Marshals, free of charge. Any law enforcement officer, you know, state police, county, town, city, whatever, okay, free to come onto the site to join, free membership. And any active military personnel or any retired, law enforcement officer, we're going to let them come in for free membership. Now, membership, really, the things that people will get with the membership over and above what, because the website is an open website, people can view anything. But anybody that's a member, they'll be able to go take the courses. They're going to be able to make comments on the site. They'll be able to ask questions in the question areas. They'll be getting newsletters. I think it was one or two other things that that type of stuff that they would get. They'd be informed, of course. And so that's kind of the benefit of signing up to become a member. Now, in order, because the site, the purpose of the site is to really reach a certain goal in order to get these 20 books in the hands of each of these sheriffs, you know, one for themselves and for their deputies. And, of course, we want some extras for people who might need extras. We can mail them out. In order to do that, we have to obviously collect money. And so I'm thinking, again, it's going to probably run a 60, 70, maybe 80,000. I don't know. Again, we'll have to figure it out. The mailing is another thing. Okay, so it's another cost. Packaging and mailing it out costs more money. But we need to get these out to all of these sheriffs, and so therefore we're thinking the membership for honorary member. An honorary member is anybody that is not one of the people I mentioned in law enforcement or the military. We're all honorary members. I'd be an honorary member. Anybody else who joins would be an honorary member. And therein is where we may be able to get some money real quick. We could potentially get 10 grand very quick if we charge $60 a year for the membership. Now, we're going to go on a campaign, and we already started collecting people's names who are interested in working with us on this phone call campaign. And to go out, and we're going to divvy up the phone numbers of all of our membership and get a campaign going calling each one of our members. We have 6,300 plus members, so we need to. We want to phone call all these people. We're going to ask them, a series. We're going to give them, some information. We're going to create a skit, so to speak, a dialogue that people can kind of work off of. And we don't want to be on the phones with people any more than a minute, 2 minutes max. Of course, if you get into a conversation and you want to spend more time, that's your business. But remember, we're going to look for everybody to make commitments on how many people are going to be able to call in a week. Some people may be able to call 20 people in a week. Some people may be able to call 100 people in a week. Some people maybe even more than that. It depends on how much time you have. But we're looking for as many volunteers as possible. So please get a hold of Jan and let him know that, give him your information, whatever he needs off of you, so he can contact you. And when we get this project going, we'll get this information. Our next meeting on this is going to be next Monday at 7 o'clock, right here in this room. Next Monday at 7 o'clock in this room. And I hope to have the dialogue at that point, what we're going to be talking to the people, what we're going to be saying to them, so to speak, so people can start working on that. People can kind of curtail it the way, however they want. But we do want to cover certain points, and the key thing is to rally around the sheriffs. I think this is going to be really a powerful program. I think it's going to bring people together because we're going to bring them around the sheriffs. We're going to connect the sheriffs with the COSs. So we're going to get some grassroots movements between the people to do their business, whatever that may be, and support the sheriff. We want to get the sheriff as educated as possible. We want to get all of the people who are the COSs educated in the law. They need to understand the common law and the process of law. They need to understand the basics. They may not need to understand how to go into a court and battle, but they do need to understand what the job of the sheriff is and what the Constitution says. And we all need to be able to understand when our rights are being violated. We also all need to understand when they're trying to enforce a repugnant statute upon us. And the sheriffs need to understand that. So this is a campaign for knowledge. It's a campaign directed towards the sheriff, but the people are going to benefit from this. Even the grand jury is going to benefit from this. It's going to build our ranking. It's going to get a momentum. Once we exhaust, or as we're making the calls, we're going to want to encourage everyone. We're going to get some, you know, letters out to our members to really push the focus. And on the phone calls, we're going to remind the people. Look, we ask the people, do you belong to liberty groups, by the way, in your local area? You know, how many are you involved with? And when's the next time you plan on going? Can you bring this message to them and have them get out to the website to see what we're doing? Have them learn how to join the COS or get a COS started in their town, in their county, and make that connection with the sheriff. And we're going to work with you. And guess what? If your sheriff turns up and gets onto the page and you're onto the page, he's already showed he has an interest. And so we're going to make that connection, that introduction. And let's say the project takes a year. I think that's a long time. It could be realistic, but I certainly hope it's not. I think it could take a lot less, but let's say a year. Well, look, a year ago I didn't think we'd still be here. I thought we'd be really down the tubes fighting or whatever the case may be. Even 2 years ago I didn't think we'd be here a year ago. So who knows what the future holds, and the timing of these things is not up to us. That's up to our maker. So really, this project is a very important project. We've always known the sheriff was an important project. We've tried so many times to communicate with the sheriff. I think our big mistake, and I mentioned this last time we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I think our big mistake is when we sent them papers that looked like papers going into the court, for they were. And they got nervous of that. They figured, oh, well, we can't figure that out. That's all about law. Let me go get the county attorney here and give it to him and see what he thinks. Oh, these are crazy guys. That's where we made a mistake. So, let me go through this page that we have. And as far as the money process, you know, how much we're going to have to get, we'll figure that out in the next couple of weeks, and then we'll put that proper total up there. We will show a counter there that will tell us how much money has come in to date as we move along down the project. And we'll be putting out reports on the website, you know, what sheriffs were delivered to and so on and so forth. Okay, so let me read some of this. I don't know if I'm going to read this whole page, but I'm going to read this starting from the top. Okay, welcome to the Power of the County Sheriff website. The purpose of this website, of this site, is to facilitate a proper education for sheriffs, their deputies, and other law enforcement and military persons. It is extremely important to understand the difference between law and statutes. We must first understand that law is derived from God or man. It was Thomas Jefferson who discovered America's freedom formula. And by the way, this is the first time I'm reading this out loud, so this is where I'll, you know, kind of catch some of my errors in English or whatever. So it was Thomas Jefferson who discovered America's freedom formula, and we were warned by our founding fathers that the formula for freedom could be lost in a single generation by simply not providing a proper education for our children. Thomas Jefferson said, "I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional powers. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-governing is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Therefore, if we are not educated sufficiently, we cannot exercise oversight. It will quickly become self-evident to the reader of this website that this is that suitable education Thomas Jefferson wrote about. We are one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. We the people covenanted with God when we declared independence in 1776 and claimed entitlement of the laws of nature and of nature's God. When we declared, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. The laws of nature's God is the common law, and under our own authority, gifted by God. We, the people, exercise our unalienable rights to institute a government via a constitution when we said, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this constitution for the United States of America. Take note that we the people ordained the Constitution, and we received that unalienable right to ordain law for government from God. Thereby, we the people, through the Constitution, empowered our legislators with the purpose to secure the aforesaid rights in Article 1, Section 1, where we read, all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. It is also important to note that when man legislates law for men without their consent, they war against God and man. The United States Supreme Court defines statutes as an act of the legislature declaring, commanding, or forbidding something, a particular law enacted and established by the will of the legislative department of government. The written will of the legislature solemnly expressed according to the forms necessary to constitute it the law of the states. The United States Supreme Court said, the common law is the real law, the supreme law of the land. The codes, the rules, the regulations, the policies and statutes are not the law. That there every man is independent of all laws, except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any institution formed by his fellow men without his consent. We the people consent to legislated laws only as we defined it in the Constitution for the United States of America. As Thomas Jefferson put it, we bound the government down by the chains of the Constitution. We the people defined that law in Article 6 as this Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuant thereof and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the constitutions or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. Simply put, we the people are bound and judged under the common law and statutes where we have given our consent, and government is bound and judged under the Constitution that we ordained. I think I had to play a little bit with that language, but we the people vested Congress with the following 18 powers under Article 1, Section 8. 1. Power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excise, to pay the debt and provide for the common defense and general welfare. 2. To borrow money. 3. To regulate commerce. 4. To establish a uniform rule of naturalization and bankruptcies. 5. To coin money. 6. To provide for the punishment of counterfeiting. 7. To establish post offices and post roads. 8. To promote the progress of science and useful arts. 9. To constitute tribunals. 10. To define the punish piracies. 11. To declare war. 12. To raise and support armies. 13. To provide and maintain a navy. 14. To make rules for the government and regulations of the land and naval forces. 15. To provide for the calling forth of the militia. 16. To provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. 17. To exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over Washington, D.C. And 18. To make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers. So how is it that Congress has written so many statutes beyond their authority? How is it that judges uphold legislation that legislators had no authority to write? How is it that lawyers counsel all government agencies and law enforcement to obey and enforce unconstitutional statutes? How is it that sheriffs and other law enforcement officers enforce unconstitutional statutes? How can an oath taker be an oath keeper if he does not know the law? How is it that the people obey unconstitutional statutes to their own peril of loss of liberty? We were to be a nation of laws under God. How have we become a nation of statutes under men? The answer is simply, we lost our way because we are ignorant to the law, of the law, and thereby lost the lamp upon our feet, up our path. While government does what it does best, taking more and more power as our liberties continue to be nibbled away until we find ourselves enslaved under corporatism. As Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. The United States Supreme Court gave us half of the solution to our problems. I should probably make that focus more towards the sheriff. The United States Supreme Court gave the sheriff half the solution to our problems when they said, the general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose since its unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principle follows that imposes no duties, confers no rights, creates no office, bestows no power or authority on anyone, affords no protection, and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law. Indeed, insofar as a statute runs counter to the fundamental law of the land, the Constitution, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. The other half of the solution is to empower yourself through education, and this is the purpose of this website. If you are like most people, you may think you lack the education to understand the law. Then we say unto you, if you have understood what you have read on this page already, then you can understand the law. As Thomas Jefferson advised, laws are made for men of ordinary understanding and should be therefore construed by ordinary rules of common sense. Their meaning is not to be sought for in metaphysical subtleties, which may make anything mean everything or nothing at pleasure. Only the sheriff can stop these encroachments. But in order to stand upon the first half of the solution, the sheriff must first find his backbone in the second, the law. Sheriffs are responsible for the actions of his deputies, in that they too need a proper education. As we stated in the beginning, the purpose of this site is to facilitate a proper education because we the people need constitutional sheriffs who will protect our liberties in our courts and our streets. We also will endeavor to connect sheriffs with people in their counties who have the same desire to restore law in government. Membership to this site is free to sheriffs, deputies, U.S. Marshals, and all other law enforcement and active military persons. All laymen can join our membership as honorary members for $60 a year, which will help offset the overhead cost of this site. And our Sheriff's Project membership benefits include access to free courses, weekly newsletter, and the ability to comment on pages and ask questions on our Q&A page. This site offers a vast education for those who are interested in understanding the philosophy of law. Might do the science of law. American jurisprudence is the science of law, but either philosophy of law or the science of law. So let me reread that. This site offers a vast education for those who are interested in understanding the philosophy of law. As a minimum, for sheriffs, deputies, and U.S. Marshals, we suggest the following curriculum. 1. First, take the constitutional course, which is about 6 or 7 hours long and could be completed over a weekend. 2. Take the civics course, which has about 120 hours of videos and audio, so it will take some time to get through. And I got to reword this part. But anyway, in an hour or two a day, we'll get you through the course in 2 to 4 months. The civics course covers American history, common law, constitution, and an in-depth look on how America is where we are today. 3. Read something every day under the law tab. And that's, we've got a lot of stuff that's going to go under the law tab. As a matter of fact, I'm going to package a lot of that stuff in a way that will be easy to find on our website because it's pretty powerful stuff, I think. And 4, remember this one principle. If you endeavor to fully understand what you are reading, seeing, or hearing, you will never forget it. The best way to learn is through osmosis. Now, we got 7 videos. It's going to be on the bottom of this page. The first 5 videos are 5 parts to Sheriff Mack. Excellent, excellent interview with Sheriff Mack. He covers everything, all kinds of questions and different things for sheriff's powers, empowerments. I mean, I remember hearing this a long time ago, you know, some years back. But I re-listened to them while I was chasing them down. And they're a lot more powerful than I realized. So he really gives a good education to the sheriff right there in these videos. So that's going to be very helpful, 5 videos. The next 2 videos is the sheriff's meeting that they had out west some years back. And they had 100-plus sheriffs nationally come out there, and they had a convention, and they had a good time. And Michael Bodnarik spoke out there, and so did Sheriff Mack. So we have 1 tape with Sheriff Mack speaking and another one, and they're about an hour and a half long maybe. And the other one is with Michael Bodnarik speaking about the Constitution. Focus towards sheriffs, empowering sheriffs, bringing sheriffs together, powerful, powerful stuff. So basically, that's kind of the first page where we're at. I do say I have to add some corrections. Maybe people can have some ideas to be able to say some of these things in a much more exciting way, possibly. Some corrections or maybe something we can add or whatever. But pretty much we want the website to be laid out the way National Liberty Alliance's website is laid out, where we have on the right side this area where we can put banners and stuff, and on the left side, the wider part, is where we tell the story or whatever it is we're telling on the page. But we're also looking to put that blue bar up top with the drop-downs. And right now what we have, which I think might be exactly what we need here on the top of the page, is we have a nice old-fashioned sheriff star, like from out west. And on the right side, we have Congress adds the Bill of Rights to the Federal Constitution, and a hand on the Bible. And in the center, the power of the county sheriff with the quote, the Jefferson quote, which says, "With a firm reliance on the protection of the divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." So I suggest to everyone, you can cut and paste those videos down at the bottom, and everyone should watch them. They're really powerful. Like I said, the first 5 is 5 parts of Sheriff Mack back and forth in an interview. Collectively, it's probably, they're probably about 15, 20 minutes apiece. So 5 times 10 is 50, 75, probably about 75 minutes. And then the other two are probably an hour and change each. So, but it's well worth the time. You know, you want to watch something in the evening, stick that on and watch it. Let's see. Right, I guess that's it for that website for now. Again, we're hoping to have this up in the next couple of weeks. We need volunteers. I'm figuring this, and I think it's a reasonable figure. If we can get 100 active people from National Liberty Alliance to go over there and join as a member, okay, that right away would bring us $6,000. If we can get 200 people, and we're going to go on to that phone campaign, if we can get 200 people to go join, that's $12,000. We can immediately get out there and start buying books. That's why we need to hit the ground running when this website goes up. Now, bear in mind, to get the books, I'm going to get it, like I said, I'm hoping to get it finished this week. I think I will. I know I've been saying that for weeks, but I've been bogged down with a lot of other things, and the book is more than I thought. But I'm close, and I got majority the bulk of the work. I just got to put it in a good order and write some stuff in between and tie some things together, and you know, write a few pages here and a few pages there. But we're close. I think reasonably I might be done next week. If I get done, we'll have a PDF copy. It may not be the corrected copy, but it'll be a copy, and we'll go in for perfection. You know, have people work on the English and the punctuation and so on, and then we'll replace the copy we put up at first with the corrected copy. We'll be looking for people to comment, give ideas, thoughts. How can we make it better? What should we really put up front? Because we got to grab them up front. We got to get their attention up front. And so that's really the idea on that book. And so we want to get it out early so we can kind of, you know, brainstorm it and get it moving. The moment we get it reasonably perfected, I'm going to get it out to our printer for a quote. And and I would think it's going to take, last time we did this with this printer, it took maybe 3 days to get the quote. They were pretty quick at it, 2-3 days. So we'll get the quote back pretty quick, and we'll understand exactly what kind of monies we're talking about. And then we can be able to write the plan, the money plan, on how much money we need, at what point we can start ordering, and you know, and what our different goals are. You know, our first goal may be $10,000 and order the first order of books, and the next goal, another $10,000, order the next order of books. I don't know. We'll make that plan out. We'll lay it out and detail it on our website. So we'll get that going and get an understanding. Now, it's going to take, I remember last time we did the books, it took them about 2 weeks to get the print, and another week to print them, dry them, and get them shipped, and another week to get them. So it was like 4 weeks, 4 to 5 weeks from the time we ordered the books until we got them, okay? And so there is a time span there. But in that time span, if we have enough money to order books, and we're waiting 4 to 5 weeks for those books to be ordered, we definitely should be getting enough money to be able to ship them out and maybe get a second order going and just keep on the roll. Hopefully we'll get some people with some deep pockets who will see what we're doing and feel that this is a worthy project, that they're willing to throw some big dollars, $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, who knows. I mean, that would be really nice. But I'm counting on the widow's mite, because that's been the way it's been since the beginning. We've got great programs going with National Liberty Alliance. We started off with the committeemen. We have not forgotten that. We need to get back into the political process at some point in the future. Now is not the time. We do need, without the politics, of course. We got the committeemen. We've got the grand jury and the trial jury, the administrative process of those juries, and we've got the COS, and now we're working into the sheriffs. We have connected the whole gambit. And to hell with the judges and the lawyers. Who cares what they think, do, or say once we, the people, do finally get to that point of education? Look it. When the sheriff understands his authority and gets his backbone through education, that's the only way the sheriff's going to get the backbone to step up and tell him to go to hell and do what he has to do. It's the only way, like we watched that I'm sure a lot of people saw that the report came out with the sheriff out west with the shooting. What was that, Las Vegas? And the sheriff came out. They did the same thing out in Oregon. They pushed the sheriff up front, and the sheriff was told what to do. We know what was going on. We know who all those criminals were behind this sheriff, okay? If we can get sheriffs with a backbone and get sheriffs connected to each other and feel empowered because they got a brother relationship between themselves, they got the people behind them, and they got the backbone of the law to work off of, I mean, it would be great if a sheriff came out to the podium to talk to the people, to talk to them about what out west, and instead of giving them the bullshit, he turns around and makes the arrests, takes them right down to all these FBI agents and all these individuals that just criminals destroying our nation here, lawbreakers. The sheriff can arrest someone, take them down to the courthouse, look for the grand jury. If you can't find the grand jury, pull 25 people off the streets, bring them into a room, tell them I'm taking this room over here, get them into the room. Bring an individual before him, say, I'd like to get an indictment on this person. Let me tell you what they've done. Let me tell you what I got. And I'd like you guys to make a vote on this and give me an indictment. We don't have to go to the sheriffs don't have to go to the prosecutor. When we brought violations of law to a sheriff up in Columbia County, dead to right, these people, we had them. They were lawbreakers. And the sheriff finally did listen. And he sympathized with us, and he says, we got to go convince the prosecutor. What do you mean you got to go convince the prosecutor? Why does the sheriff have to go begging to the prosecutor? He is the gatekeeper of this criminal organization that they got going. He prevents the judges from going to jail. He prevents the crooked cops and FBI agents and all the other crooked individuals in government from going to jail. Why are we going to go to him? We should be putting him in jail. For felony rescue. All these prosecutors should be arrested for felony rescue. So the sheriff needs to understand. He could bypass them. And let's see what happens if the sheriff brings it to the people and we bring an indictment and we bring it to the judge and to the court. Let's see what they do then. Maybe it's time to arrest the judge what was the word I just used before? Well, I forget. But anyway, for aiding and abetting, okay? Maybe it's time that the sheriffs could have a backbone, and if they got the education, that's what they lack. They don't understand. They're as dumb and as stupid as we are. And we're making a difference, though. We're getting educated. We're not going to be dumb and stupid no more. We want our sheriffs to get educated. We don't want them to be dumb and stupid no more. And we want to get their deputies and the marshals. You know, most of the marshals are probably crooked. I really don't know. It doesn't look good from what I see. What I see of marshals hasn't looked very good. It's like looking at judges. But in any event, they can make the arrests. We can give the indictments, and we can force the court over, and we can start pushing this thing through. So. All of this is working together. This is maybe the wheel that we were missing. Maybe we've been running on three wheels. We need that fourth wheel. And this is it. So, all right, let's see. Questions. Jan, do we have any questions? Anybody wants to get into the 2-6 to get into the queue? Go ahead, Jan.
I didn't actually get any questions. I had some people submit some suggestions for the sheriff's books. The first one says, why don't we just put the sheriff's book up on Amazon and charge just a little over the cost of the book and then use social media to drum up a market? Let the sheriffs buy their own books and send a bunch of copies to those that log into our new website for encouragement.
Yeah, we know that's not going to work. It's just not going to work. Look, at the way to do it and to get these sheriffs out to the website and to get these sheriffs to look at the books is to give it to them. A gift in the mail comes to them. This is going to be a really pretty book. It's going to be three times the thickness of our original book, probably five times the thickness of the constitutional book. It's going to have the Constitution in it. It's going to have the Bill of Rights in it. It's going to have the Declaration of Independence. We'll probably have a couple pages of some quotes, you know, Jefferson, Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Adams quotes, probably a few pages of that. And then it's going to have a lot of stuff where they're going to be in an index, and they're going to be able to pop through that index when they need to see what it is that they need to know to give them that power, to give them the authority, to give them that backbone to go do whatever it is that they're planning and they think they realize they need to do, to give them the understanding and the realization that, you know, that they're not honoring their oath. They're not educated. Just think about what the sheriffs are doing. They're depending on the sheriff, or they're depending on the prosecutor. They're depending on that person to honor their oath for them, to interpret the law, to be able to keep the Constitution. And we all know, they don't know this, but we know, that these prosecutors don't know the Constitution at all themselves. So there is no, there is no way that the sheriff keeps their oath, because they're ignorant to the law. How can they keep an oath to something they're ignorant to? So what we need to do is give them the book for free. At least they'll skim through the first couple of pages. Hopefully our book will be so powerful enough in the first few pages it'll draw them in. They'll get reading the books and realizing that, hey, I need to share this with my sheriff. We're going to be very, very careful on how we write this book. No conspiracy, just nothing but the facts, the law, the Supreme Court. We're going to be very gentle on how we explain things. We're going to let them put two and two together when they start to realize, you know, this isn't the law that I know, but this is contrary to the things I've been taught. How am I going to deal with this one or that one? Let them come up with the idea and understanding that requiring a driver's license is unconstitutional, that you can't license a right. Let them come up with that conclusion. We'll just give them the law. We'll give them the rules. We'll give them the book with all of the information they need. And then we'll direct them to the website where they'll be able to take these courses and watch the videos and listen to the audios and really get an education, okay? And then access to, under one tab, education, is where we're going to come down in. Under education, there's going to be a secondary tab that's called law, L-A-W. And everything under that tab, okay, under law, is what all of the sheriffs and deputies really need to focus in on. Anything else on the website after that is cream, and we're trying to make that point to them. If they want to get into the philosophy law or the science of law, then they've got a whole bunch of other things underneath that educational area where they'll be able to read the great minds of the great discussions on things. And they'll get the Federalist Papers and just a whole bunch of stuff, okay, beyond. But again, we need to give them the minimum. They need to go do the minimum. So we need to get them out there. We've tried faxing them. We tried, giving them, one-page faxes once a week. We did that for quite some time. At first, we tried faxing court cases to them. That's what blew our relationship between us, because they took it to the attorneys, the county attorneys. They said these people are crazy, or they're radicals. Oh, they're terrorists, probably, you know. And so now they're cut off from us. We're wackos, and they haven't even looked at the stuff. Okay. So now there's going to be a whole different thing. It's going to be a book coming from a group, a website that was put up called The Power of the County Sheriff, and it's a free book. And I think a lot of them will see the power and the wisdom of learning it in there. You get them to the website. If they read the first page, between the first few pages of the book, first page of our website, watching the videos in the end, I think we'll hook them. We'll hook a great deal of them. Not all of them, but a great deal of them. They'll sell it to each other at some point. And then the people coming in with the COSs, building the COSs, and some people building COSs in areas where the sheriff isn't on board, they'll try to hook them and bring them in. We got the liberty groups. We need to work with the liberty groups. They'll try to hook them and bring them in. We need to get the liberty groups into the COS. We can bind them together as one, as all of us, by rallying around the sheriff's website, the power of the county sheriff. So we rally around that, and we get everybody working together, trying to get the books into the hands of the people. everybody getting educated themselves. It's a beginning. It's a place, really, a nice good springboard to bring us all together. I see the perfect circle here. But no way, if we try to tell them and give them a call, an email, because we've been sending emails for a long time. We can get them a fax. We can send them an email. We can give them a call. Hey, go out to Amazon. Buy this book. Oh, yeah, okay, buddy. See you later. You're not going to get them to go. They don't even know that they need this. There's going to be a lot of sheriffs that don't think they need this, and they'll get the books in the mail. They'll open it up and say, oh, what's this? And they'll maybe flip through the first couple of pages and read it, and then it might turn them to say, you know what? Maybe I do need to learn something here. Maybe I don't know what I should know. You know? We got to hit them hard in the first couple of pages to let them know you took an oath and you swore to uphold the Constitution. And you're ignorant to the Constitution. How can you possibly uphold your oath to something that you are ignorant to? We got to get that point, that thought out right in the beginning somehow. It's got to be powerful. And no, the other thing won't work. We've done so many things close to it. It wouldn't even come. It's not going to work. This is the only plan. I think this is really an excellent plan, as a matter of fact. I think this is the thing that's going to get them. And again, you got 3,100 and some odd sheriffs, okay? If we get 200 or 300 or 400 of them coming in on us over the course of time, they'll be working on the others, okay? And the Liberty Groups, COSs, look, we'll get them. This is the thing. Anyway, any other thing, Chad?
Yeah, the next one is a suggestion for the mailing, and it suggests only forward one sheriff handbook to each county, and then later forward any amount of handbooks that the sheriff requests. Now, I seem to remember we did one mailing that was the power of the county sheriff. Do you think they will have forgotten that when we go to a website called the Power of the County Sheriff?
Well, maybe, maybe not. I think they have short memories on things like this when they ignore something and it's kind of off. But either way, one way or the other, that's all in God's hands on how that would work out in the mind of the sheriff. No, I think we need to send 20 books so that they get it immediately. It's a gift. It's a good gift. I thought about doing one, but bear in mind, look at, you're going to have to package that one and mail that one, okay? And then at some point, then you got to start taking orders. They're going to call, I want 20, I want 10, I want 6, I want this, I want that, I want the other thing. Someone's got to answer those phones or take those orders, even if it's done digitally. Someone's got to go through those orders. Who do you think is going to be doing that? And someone's going to have to package those things, put the necessary postage on it, take it down to the post office and get it out. It's going to be on a daily basis. Who do you think is going to do all that? That will be my job, and I don't have the time for that. I will get in the initial once a week or, look, it. Once we reach a certain thing, if we're going to send out the 300, I'll get a day going, and one day, pop, get them all packaged, done, shipped, out, and gone. Now wait for another month or so before the next 300 or 500 or 1,000 goes out. Whatever it is, I don't know. I'd love to say get them out at one time, to 3,000. We did 3,000 at one time as sheriffs, and let me tell you, I had my wife, my son, my daughter, my niece, my nephew, and myself, six of us. And it took us days to put all this together, days to the sheriffs we went out. We did the same thing with the judges and stuff. It's a tremendous amount of work, and I just can't do it. And I can't just entrust. I found that I've been in business a long time, many, many years, and I'm retired now. And I have learned you have to have management at all times. You can't let anything go without management. And if you can't find good management, then you can't run the job. And if I can't find someone close by that's good management to manage this and do it for free, okay, do it for free, and get them to get volunteers to do it for free and then get it done properly, it's just not going to work. So anyway, my experience says this is the way to do it, and I think that's where we'll stick with it at this point. Good ideas, but again, we've been through so much of this stuff. We've got experience in a lot of different things, and this we think is the best way to go about. Anything else, Jen?
Nope, that was everything.
Okay, is there any announcements?
No, there's no.
No announcements
that I got for this.
Gerard, you got anything before we move over? Gerard? I know, I saw him here. Did he sneak out the back door
here.
There? Oh, he's muted. That's why he's talking into his mic. He thinks we're hearing him.
Yeah.
He's a mute. A mutant. Unmute yourself.
That dang box goes different places, and I forget where I put it. I'm all over.
You're in a panic, huh?
Yeah, I was on another screen. I'm reading other things as you're talking. I'm on other screens looking, you know, for questions people are giving me. But anyway, also, look, they're going to be able to, somebody will be able to go and look on and download this themselves if they really want to, right? We're going to make it available on the web if they want to download it. So.
Well, everybody that goes to the site to look at what we're doing and consider what we're doing, they should want to see the book, and we'll have the book up there in PDF form, and everyone could get a copy, yes, download it.
Yeah, so that's another way that it'll get out. Look, these guys, if they like that book, if it looks good and all that, they're not going to want a downloaded version. They're going to want the real McCoy. And by putting some of them in their hands, they'll see the quality of it, and they'll be more apt to order more than I think.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, again, you know, we got to get them into their shirt pockets. That's the key. We got to get them into their shirt pockets. We got to get them out taking the courses. Okay, and you know, when we get to the course page, you're going to deliver the thought and the idea to the sheriff. By the way, sheriff, you should be requiring your deputies to take this course as well as yourself, of course, because the education is just unmatched from anywhere. You're not going to get an education like this anywhere. But the key thing here, sheriff, by the way, is you can know whether your deputies actually did the course and finished it, because there's a place where you can go, sheriff, and maybe we'll just give this to the sheriffs only, where the sheriffs can go onto the page and see. Oh, Deputy Paul, he signed up, but he's been there for 3 months, and he's only at 1%. Let me get a hold of him when he gets into work today, you know? You see, he can check up on him and make sure. Or he can require them to deliver to them a certificate, you know? That they're going to have to pay for. It's $20 each. It's a donation. It doesn't cost that much to print it out and get it out. But it is money that goes into the pot that helps the cause. So we're going to stay with the charge on anybody who wants a certificate, okay? So they can get a certificate on the civics course. They can get a certificate constitutional course. We can make note to the sheriff, hey, you can require this, that they get the certificate, and you can post it in the office. We took our courses, you know? And that's a good thing. It's good for the people to see that too, you know, to know that the sheriffs are up on the Constitution and they're ready to do what needs to be done now, you know. And the Liberty groups will be the best for them, the best supporters, once they realize the sheriff is involved with this and the connection is made and we help them with the COS and we make the connection with the sheriff. We can actually make the introduction to the sheriff to the group. Okay, but the fact that they're both on the same website, getting the same education, and whatever, there's so many things that are so positive about this particular project, and it is the icing on the cake on everything else we're working on. It's the closing of the circle. Okay, and one of the points we're going to make the note to this: you look at Mr. Sheriff, you are not a politician. It is true that you're elected, but you are not a politician. Okay, you answer to the people, okay, and don't take any of that funny money from the feds. You don't need that. They want to give you something, take it. But if you got to do something for it, you come to the people. We will go to our counties and we will push them to get the funding for what you need. If you need something and you're not getting it, and if it's something big that the state needs to support it, then we will go to the support. And if Joe, Frank, and Mary, and you know, Sheriff Joe, Sheriff Frank, Sheriff Mary, Sheriff this one has got all this stuff because they played ball and you don't have it, we will make a stink about that. We will get behind you. We'll help you deal with it, and we'll get you what you need. You know? And by the way, we'll get a movement going with all of that equipment that they get laying all over the country here for the you know, all these foreign troops. Let's go seize that stuff. It's ours anyway. Let's give that to the sheriffs. I bet they'll love that one.
You know, it really is about education. I was talking to one of our members that sent one of our letters from the grand jury that we, you know, the boilerplate ones we have. And he says, oh, no, this is not proper. This is not a place for a grand jury indictment. He said, you gotta go by the procedures and see the attorney general and do that whole. So their whole idea, they think that the state's going to fix the state. And that's the problem is in the state. You're asking the fox to fix the hen house, basically. But you see, they think that you have to, that the grand jury can't step in. See, that's education. Look, the grand jury can come in anytime, anywhere, in any place, in any problem. If the law is being broken, then they can indict. They don't have to ask Snyderman. You know what I mean? I mean, if Snyderman didn't find it and he didn't do anything about it, that's his problem. If the grand jury makes it known and they send a letter to the sheriff and they say, look, this is against the Constitution. These crimes are happening. You know, they're taking these people's homes and stuff. The sheriff doesn't say, oh, well, no, you have to go see the attorney general, because he just committed treason by not upholding the position of his job, which is to take care of that crime, regardless of what he thinks the statutory procedures are, you know?
No, exactly.
That's
yeah, it's all about education. That's how we save our nation, through education, because education will bind us together, because that's what this education very particularly does. And when we talk with confidence, look, it's a whole different thing when you walk in the court and the judge is worried about what you know because of what he sees on the paper. And what you might say in that courtroom, or what you might not even say in that courtroom, okay? That's going to worry the judge. You know, I have found from going into courtrooms so many times, and it's always up against the state, and you know, the judge always is the first hurdle you got to go over. I mean, why do I have to fight you, judge? How come I got to come into court and fight the judge so I can get to the real fight here? You know, that's the problem, okay? So, but when you come in with confidence and surety, and you know what you need to do, and the enemy sees that, they back off, because power is in knowledge, and that's what gives you a backbone. Look at, remember the sheriff, your sheriff there, Gerard, was talking to you about, well, I don't know the law or this or that. How can I know this or the? What was he saying? Do you recall?
I was complaining about the warrant that he exercised, and I told him they weren't valid. They weren't signed with a wedding signature, and you know, they were stamped by the girls in the office. I said that's an illegal document, and he was like, well, I don't know what they hand them down to me, and I just exercised them. And I said,
you see, he's the water boy. He's the water boy.
It's your duty to know that whether it's good or not. That's what your job is.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He's the water boy. Just think what he could do with the power. I'll tell you what. Let me tell you. Everyone, you may have watched them in the past. Everybody needs to refresh themselves if you've seen them. There's 5 videos that Sheriff Mack does. He's sitting there, and someone's asking him questions. You don't hear too many much of the questioning, but you can hear the answers, you know, very clearly. And he's responding to one question after another, after another, after another, after another. And he's covering so many bases, and he's covering those kind of things, okay? This guy is so empowering, okay? Any sheriff that sits and listens to him, he's empowering them. Everybody needs to go watch those videos. When you get a chance,
well,
watch those videos.
To tell you the truth, you think they would welcome this with opening arms, because the jury gives power to the sheriff, and the sheriff gives power to the jury. It's
absolutely
a symbiotic relationship.
That's right.
When they realize we're coming in to give them power, and they're the top cop in the land, see, that's what they don't get. Right now, they're just an errand boy for the court.
Yeah, we've got to remind them that, hey, Sheriff, remember when you were a kid and you used to watch the movies, and the sheriff would come into town and he'd call the posse together, and he'd call he'd pull in the grand jury ultimately, which was a posse, and the grand jury is probably the same. And, you know, that's the power you have, man. Go pull the people off the streets. If you're not going to get it, if you go up and you're not getting your indictment, don't even bother going to him no more. Bypass him. Sheriffs don't need to do that. Go bypass him. Go talk to the jury. Get your indictment. Slap it in the court and tell the judge, I want this to move through the process. It's that simple. We will sign the papers and put a seal on it and send it through with you. how can they possibly stop that? Because if they try to stop that, well, we're going to empower the sheriff to see the crime there, covering up, concealing, removal, destroying, distorting, so on. You know, you got to file the papers. The papers need to go through the process. Once the paper goes into the court, there's a procedure and a process that cannot be interrupted or hijacked out. It's got to move through. Anybody pulls that out, they committed a crime. Once the sheriff understands that, okay, just all the papers we put into court, all the crimes that this guy is committing up there in Albany, okay, just think about that. We'll get him. We'll get him.
Hey,
he's listening, I'm sure. We're going to get you.
Isn't it true that the coroner can also call the grand jury? The coroner's.
Oh, coroner. Absolutely. When it comes to a homicide, it's the coroner that runs the game.
Right. So the
not the sheriff at that point. The sheriff runs the game, but once it's a dead body, the coroner comes on the scene. He plays second fiddle to the sheriff plays second fiddle to the coroner as far as the process and movement and indictment process of that body. Of course, the sheriff will work with the coroner to tell their story to the grand jury, but the coroner is the lead one, and the coroner can sit as the administrator of the court. Just as long as it's a homicide, and on the other side, if it's not a homicide and it's a different criminal act, well, the sheriff can sit in as the administrator of the court. We don't even need a judge.
Yeah, so those two guys should become real friendly. Anyway.
Absolutely. And the grand jury, you know, and the administrators of the grand jury. Think of the power and the authority of the people right there. Now we'll take, and the COS is working with them and morphing into the real committeemen, taking back the control and getting rid of the top-down structure and bringing it back to the grassroots, empowering themselves. And that's what we do. We the people empower ourselves. We don't get empowered by the state. We don't get empowered by somebody of some other authority. We empower ourselves. We have the power of deciding right from wrong. We got the power to nullify. We got the power to decide to indict, to convict, or whatever. That's our power. That's the power of the people. Nobody else has. The sheriff doesn't have that power. Coroner doesn't have that power. Judge doesn't have that power. No officer of the court has that power. Only the that's people power. God gave us that power. All right. Let me get off my soapbox here, and I'm going to pass the site over to you, the wall, whatever they call it, okay?
Get off my wall, okay.
All right, I'm going to pass that to you. We're going to move over to Brent. Brent's here, isn't he?
I don't know.
Brent, where you at? Anybody see Brent? Maybe he's looking to be unplugged here. No, you can't do that either. Jan, are you looking for Brent?
Yeah, I'm looking for him. I haven't seen him yet.
No. All right, while he's looking for Brent, why don't you take control of the board and take your first question, and when Brent comes up, we'll switch over to Brent.
Okay, let me see. We got anybody in the queue yet?
Yeah.
Did you open it up?
Yeah. Don't kick everyone out. Don't click clear.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, how about end session?
Just go click. Yeah. Just click their little phone next to them. Okay.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know who this is. It's a 617 area code. So let me know.
Yeah, give us
your
first name and state.
And state. You've been unmuted. Go ahead. 617 area code.
Yeah, that's me here.
Okay, me here.
Got a quick question for you.
Yeah, what's your first name?
Me. No.
Oh, me.
Yeah.
Me.
It's just me.
Just
me.
What state?
Yeah. I just want to ask my question.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
Yeah.
it's basically about the two types of juries that you guys have that are available. And it's because I'm just listening to your call, and I've noticed that you guys have like a normative perspective, a normative stance on your juries and the issues that you guys are taking up, because they're issues of statewide and national concern, right? And that is kind of civil in character, right? So it even though the jury comes from, you know, is a common law, you know, thing, but the issues that you guys are trying to solve and settle are more statewide and national issues.
Yeah, the connection between all the cases that we're dealing with is subversion against the United States of America by enemies both foreign and domestic. That is the connection in every single case. You know, we're looking at RICO, mm-hmm. we're looking at subversion. But go ahead, finish your question.
Well, no, I just think that's an important distinction to make because of the quite selfish and personal and private use of juries, right, and from the at the local community level, but then there's also the jury decisions in issues of tort or issues of other issues, normative issues is what they're like, what they're called really. So it sounds a lot like you're on the right path, John, and stuff. You know, by the way, you know who this is already, but the idea is that you guys are on the right path with it, okay? And I was wondering if you guys have a separate department or already set up for dealing with issues of a more local concern. Are you planning on maybe incorporating any other groups into the fold?
Oh, yeah, look at. Our main focus is this, to build administrations in every single county across America, which we can literally do overnight once we hit the landslide, or once we get certain powers and authorities to move forward, we're going to then get a critical mass. So critical mass has to be hit. We have enough people poised and educated at this point to really kind of control the influx of people who aren't educated, to make sure they get an education. We require all administrators to take both of our courses, and they too should be studying all of the things under law on the sheriff's page. We're going to create a page like that on our website on NLA. But look at the key thing is this. We need four administrators, four individuals for every single county. It's a minimum of four per county. I would think for most counties that's going to be sufficient. On the larger cities and stuff, like let's take the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, and you're going to need a heck of a lot more than four in each county. So they'll have to figure out how many they need. They mean 20, 25. Okay. I really don't know. But these are just...
Can I interrupt for a sec?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm under the impression that the counties are authorized by legislatures. Is that correct?
Counties are what? Authorized by legislature? They have a county legislator, but go ahead.
Yeah, how does a county come into existence? I guess my whole thing is if we're trying to claim authority of the county and the counties are
the counties,
created
I
by
believe,
the
were here before the states were here.
Okay.
You know, counties come from, the idea of the county comes from, going back into England.
This
okay?
is very important clarification to make, John, because when we talk about de jure organic governance, right, self-government, we're really talking about taking it back to, you know, beyond the inception of the state, right, and beyond the normative period, pre-Norman invasion, you know what I'm saying, interesting.
All politics is local.
At a local level. That's right.
Yeah.
You took the words out of my mouth. And they got us this idea that, you know, the Fed is higher than the state is higher than the county, the county's higher than the town. It's not true. Because if you had a town that was doing the right thing, the county wouldn't be able to abuse them. And if all your towns in the county were like that, then the state wouldn't be able to abuse the county. You see, we got that other guy we're going to be talking to where he makes them responsible on a local on a personal local level for the things that they do, and it's very powerful because what happens is these local guys that are facilitating that, they leave, they run because they can't hold up to it, and what happens is the state and the federal has nobody to do their work then. You see, if you educate mm-hmm. the foot soldiers and they lose the foot soldiers, the guy that's on the top can't operate. They depend on us lower beings
right.
down here doing their work.
Yes.
So when you clean up the lower ends, the rats will run out of the top because there's no place for them. There's no support for them. It's like taking the farms out and taking the food out. They can't eat. And, you know what I mean?
You know what the whole thing is, Gerard, is that there are some issues of law that have never been settled.
That's right.
Yet. You know, and this is what we're dealing with right now, is these issues of county origination and effectuation of authority.
Well, look, they've all been dealt with, but they've been bastardized.
The
you know
power
I mean?
Well, some issues have never been litigated, though, right, guys? It's really
well,
true.
Yeah, that's true. But look, once the power gets back into the people, and the people get educated, we start educating our children, and we get to that point where, you know, really the people are educated, the power is going to always be at the grassroots level. It's going to be in the towns, the cities, collectively the counties. That's where the real power is going to be. The state's going to owe its existence to the counties. Remember, once the law enforcer,
that's right, John.
Chief law enforcer of the county, understands who he is, that he's a Doberman Pinscher, and he didn't realize it, okay, believe me, the whole tune is going to change. And when he understands he can take these people, he doesn't have to go deal with the prosecutor anymore, the judge, he can take them right to the people, boy, that's going to be huge.
You know what, John? You just made me think of something. Okay, that would be awesome. What we need is a jury verdict, okay, from National Liberty Alliance to make a constitutional amendment here in California, okay? To allow the formation of counties by the people without the legislator's approval.
Well, look, we could fix that at a political level. You don't need a constitutional decree or anything to fix those problems. And look, at common law in itself fixes itself in this once it starts to execute itself.
Okay, let's address the issue of constitutional amendment. All right.
Let me make this point. This is very important because let's take a look at Connecticut. Connecticut's got 8 counties and no sheriffs, okay? They lost their sheriffs a few years back. Okay, and the people thought it was done legally, that they voted them out. Well, that's an impossibility. You can't vote out the constitutional officer of the court, for there is no authority and protection of the court. Okay, so it goes hand in hand. You can't disconnect and get rid of the sheriff. Now, the county still needs to be there for the boundaries. You can call it whatever you want. I mean, look, at some places they call it a borough, which I guess means county. I really don't know. But I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's still a county in theory. It's still an area of a boundary that the sheriff reigns in as far as being the constitutional authority and protector of the Constitution in that area. So every area of the United States, throughout the United States, there's those little sub-areas which we call counties, and they call them boroughs, and they call them, there's another name I hear, too, that
Ward.
They call them. Well,
Ward. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there it is. It's still the same thing. But let me go back, and I think you already know what I'm going to say, but for the people who don't know, okay, getting back to the administration, every single county, okay, has a group of people in the court that deals with the jury, the grand jury, the trial jury. They call them, they get them, they pull them in, they orientate them, they bring the whole process, put it all together. Then the judge comes in and then he taints the jury from his perspective. And, of course, the prosecutor comes in with the grand jury, he taints the grand jury from his perspective, and nobody knows nothing. You've got a total government control process. The government controls the judge, controls the prosecutor, controls the jury. And the poor slob in there that's fighting for his life doesn't have a chance, okay? We need to take that away from them. There's no way to get away from that. We must take it away. This is our process. Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell us what to do. We're the people. We'll tell you what to do. Don't come and taint us to tell us what the law is. We'll tell you what the law is. You see, this is the when the people know this and they can do that and they can step up with their own backbone and do that, that's where we're going to take back this entire nation. And it's an overnight thing without one shot being fired, and we'll take Washington down and throw it away and replenish it with people, real people, not all these puppets and stuff. But let's get back to the administration. Now, those four administrators are the investigative body for the grand jury. Okay, the first people that are seen when a person wants to talk to the grand jury, wants to make a complaint, the first people they're going to talk to is the administrators. There's four of them for every county. Now, we have to get them on a payroll in a different way. We've got a plan. I don't want to divulge it. I don't want to Devoujit, I guess is the way to say that word. I don't want to mention exactly the specifics on it, but at some point in time we will reveal it. When the time comes to move in, we'll train people exactly how it works and how to be able to get the funds to be able to fund the payroll and everything for the administrators and the process. But look it. First order of business, the person got the grand jury's door's got to be open. Someone comes in, they got a problem. They make a phone call, they call the grand jury, they get the administrators on the phone, they got a problem. I'd like to come in and talk with the grand jury. Well, maybe it's something I can help you with. What kind of problem do you have? You see, they may be able to deal with it, make a phone call and fix the problem, and it's done, okay? Just by the phone call coming from the grand jury administrators. Now, if they can't fix the problem, then they make an opportunity for the people, that person, to come in and talk to the grand jury. So they come in and bring their case to the grand jury. So the grand jury says, okay, this is what we want to do, and the grand jury makes the phone call, or they ask the administrators to make the phone call in the name of the grand jury to require A, B, and C, or make them come down to deal with the problem. If they can't fix the problem still, then they can consider an indictment. They're going to go to a trial jury, and the trial jury is going to decide the end solution, and that's it. If it's a crime, it sort of works in the same way with restitution in the focus. But the key thing also is the fact that these people need to be orientated. We have to educate on a grassroots level, and this is where the committee men can come in. The whole process.
That's true.
But you can bring a jury together that's totally ignorant to the law. You can bring them together and give them a good orientation in 6 to 8 hours. You can give them everything they need, the right mindset, honor, justice, and mercy, and a few things, you know, look at there's got to be remedy for the individual, so on and so forth. Okay, everything else works from the heart. The law is written in the hearts of men. God has already told us. He didn't lie to us. God wrote his laws in the hearts of men. We know right from wrong. So we don't need anyone to tell us about the law. We don't need anyone to tell us what needs to be done here. We'll figure that out on our own. By the way, you work for us. We don't work for you. You're the servant. Shut up and sit down. That's how we got to handle these people. And this is the attitude we have to get. And this is the process that must take place in each county. And now you will have government by consent that has been put in its place. Period.
Right, and a real self-government, too, I might add, because, when we're talking self-governance, we're really talking about organized communities, and it's not just one person that is, like, you can sit here and say self-governance. That's the whole mind screw right there, that we've been propagandized, okay, to believe in sovereign citizenship, and that one individual has like, all this, like, if you want independent freedom. I don't want to get off on a separate. We all do have freedoms. I'm getting too convoluted right now. Let me stay to the facts real quick here, because I could easily go off on a rant. But I guess the main thing is here right now is that the common person, common man, right, would not necessarily have to be educated to a high degree, right, to even qualify for, to be a member on a jury of local or national or statewide,
right.
And the reason why is because here's a quote real quick. If we instead define ethical argument as an appeal to the ethos of the community, right, then legal training is not necessary and may be actually a hindrance. Sometimes, you guys, legal education is actually a hindrance to actually getting a community decision, And so
amen,
that's what we
that.
Do not
amen
want.
That.
Amen, amen. All right, I yield.
I find too much writing boring. I find books too long boring. And there's a lot of legal books that I've collected and stuff. And I can't even sit down and read them. They're so boring. Yeah, they may have some good bits in there here or there, but sheesh, why does it have to be boring? Why do they have to talk about things that is not necessary for us to know? But the bottom line is this: anybody that has common sense and a beating heart can sit on a jury. Okay, that's all it takes: common sense and a beating heart. And But they just need to be, you know, kind of cover over a few things, you know, what
restitution is,
what restitution is, what's all ridiculous right. and what's not ridiculous, you know, as far as restitution is concerned. They need to understand the honor, justice, and mercy that they got to come with. At the end of the day, they got to consider mercy. And they got to understand that they got the power to nullify anything. They can come together collectively and say, this guy is guilty as sin. But you know what? If I was him, I would do the same thing. I'd like to let him go. I agree. Let's let him go. You see, they got the power to do that too. Anything. They need to know that, okay? They need to understand.
Yes.
That. And
right.
once you can give them that to them, then they got it. Now, as far as the people getting educated, you know, everyone else, to bring this process back, the sheriff needs to be educated. We, the people who are pushing the process and involved in the grassroots, need to be educated. The committeemen need to be educated. The administrators need to be educated. But ultimately, everyone should eventually become educated, and we can make them educated. We can put it into the schools. We can put it out there through the committeemen. We can get booklets. We can get courses going that people can go through. Eventually, 20, 30 years come down the line, eventually the people generally will be educated in these areas. And that's the key where we got to get to, a proper education. That everybody must be fully informed.
Okay. Yes, John, I agree with you on that point right here, except for only on when it deals with issues of, like, normal regulatory general provisional government, because you're dealing with issues that matter to everybody, like torts, right? Tort crimes are kind of different than a personal injury, you know.
Let's go back to that now. You see, look at, we still have the equity courts. Now, bear in mind, we get to the place where we're talking about, the judges will be, responding under American jurisprudence, okay? They will be doing the right thing. They won't be serving their master, the New World Order or whoever's got something on them or whatever, or the deal they made with someone on a golf field, you know, playing golf. You know, they'll be serving the people. And when we catch them screwing around, we'll indict them. And believe me, the fear of the people will get into them. So now the judges will be good judges. And they will judge accordingly. And that process in a just system can only be just if the people are in control and consenting. As long as the people are in control and consenting, then the judges will be good judges, and they will make good decisions.
They will.
Now, let me finish. And again, I get back to trying to educate everybody. People don't know some of these things. I know you know more than most of the people here, but there's a lot of people that may be new, too. But look at when the judge comes in an equity court, and he, if I have a case, I'd much rather go before a judge on a contract dispute than go to the jury. Okay, I much rather would. Right now, I wouldn't think about going for a judge. I want a jury. Okay, but you get back justice, you get people in control and under the consent. I'm good with a judge because I know he's going to make the right decision now, and I know my case is the win because I wouldn't take it to court if it wasn't going to win. And if someone was taking me to court and I knew I wasn't going to win, I'd make a deal with them and settle it. I don't want to go to court. But if I go to court, I know I'm going to win. So when I go to court, if I got a judge, it's going to be justice. Bring me justice, then he's going to make the right decision, number one. Number two, it's going to be quick, okay? I was talking with someone right now just recently, just earlier today. They've been in court for 10 years on an equity case. It's an insurance case, and the person has property, and they were injured on the property. They've already had the trial, and it's been found for the other side. And since the 10 years, and they still haven't settled it.
A judge, right, who tried the facts, right? I bet you.
Yes, it was. The whole thing is a mess, okay? I think the case is lost, to be honest. You know, I think there's other problems now there. But it doesn't matter. The point is, you should be able to walk into a court, you serve your papers, you go through a 30-day process, get on the schedule maybe 30 days later, have a day or two in court, and you're done. No court case should take any more. No equity case should take any more than 90 days, and even that could be too long. Depending on how much cases are going through the court, 90 days is probably reasonable. There's no reason for it to go any further than that.
Here's the beautiful thing about judges, right, and our American court system, right, is that judges follow orders, too. And if you notice, a lot of prosecutors and even defendants will sometimes attempt, or just any party to a case may attempt to actually write an order for the judge.
What happened? Did we lose? Am I still here? Maybe I got lost.
Sorry about that. I don't know what hell happened. My phone must
go,
have muted.
Jeremiah.
What I was going to say was that, hey, don't say my name. I'm just playing. Yeah, it's Jeremiah.
Okay, maybe.
All right, but you all knew. But here's the thing, is that the judge issues orders that are based on the petitioner's claims, or the filer, who I'm just going to use filer as a generic term here. And so what I'm saying is, once we create verdicts, jury verdicts, right, from common law, right, we can start to issue out orders that we want these judges to actually follow suit to. In other words, we want the judge to create an order, under the common law, and we'll just delineate the actual terms of the order in writing. But that's the power of the common law, is that right now...
Are you talking about precedents?
Well, no, I'm talking about jury... Yeah, it's precedents, but it's actually the jury verdict. And if someone
wants
to appeal...
All that... Look at the jury doesn't get involved in the other jury. What I'm trying to say is...
Not a grand jury. I'm talking about just regular old trial jury.
Yes, look at... The trial jury is a tribunal, okay? And that's a common law court. When the trial jury is a single judge, he's still a tribunal, okay, then he's a jurist, he's a single judge, and then there's an appellate process to that. There's two or three appeals that you can go through after that to make sure you get justice, all right? But when that individual makes their decision, it is incumbent upon them to write down exactly how they came to that decision. So logic has to be there, and law has to be there. Law being the common law. And so it's all got to be there. And once they put that down, you can't escape it. It's pretty cut and dry and simple.
This is my point, John. It's not the judge that's supposed to write it. It's you and me. You and me have to write that.
American jurisprudence has already been laid down.
Right, there you go.
American jurisprudence.
He doesn't have, look at when a, you always can go by what authority, and he has to say, well, in the Constitution, chapter this, subject. He's not giving his opinion. What he's doing is,
that's right.
He's a expert on the law, and his job is to uphold the law, i.e.
Yeah, but
the
decision of a trial jury cannot be used as precedence because each case is different and individual
own.
That's like trying to make precedence out of legislation.
It depends,
which is exactly
John.
It
depends.
What they do through statutes.
No, hold on. I beg to differ because it depends on the issue at large.
Give me an
example. Okay, here's an example. An issue of a racketeering case. That's an issue of statewide concern, it's not necessarily a contractual issue,
What does a trial jury have to decide in a racketeering case that might become a precedence? The fact of the matter is racketeering is a crime. There is a formula that says what exactly racketeering is, what RICO is. It is a formula.
Right.
Just like there's a formula for causes of actions. Now, there are some places where they'll claim, I know the person who taught us that judges very rarely go outside the formulated causes of actions. But you can have all kinds of causes of actions that don't come out of their formulas, that come from a different perspective and they've never heard before, but an injury took place and you can bring it in for judgment. But they like to get it in a certain way. But let's take a breach of contract. In a breach of contract, there are three or four points that must be met in order to meet a conviction or a win on a breach of contract. Okay, and it's logical. It makes sense. There's no doubt about it. All right, but it's all about logic. Now, rarely is a jury a jury going to make a decision on a breach of contract when you have an equity court availability, and the judges in the equity court are under the consent and the control of the local people because we're watching them like hawks. We've already got rid of the garbage, and we're going to indict people who try to do felony rescue or play games and get their buddy a good deal somewhere or whatever. you know. So that we're going to get good verdicts at that point. We don't need nothing. But every case is a case on itself. You can't relate something as being similar here and this is a decision there. I see this in court when I was in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I saw this a lot.
Well, yeah.
Take local cases of some moron judge making a decision, okay, and saying, look,
John,
I have precedents here in this case. Who cares about that?
But what you're saying is, exemplary, is exemplifying, it's actually typifying, I don't know how to describe this, but it's actually, it's the epitome of what I'm really saying, because, it's that the common law, right, when is kind of selfish in the sense that it does pay more attention to peculiar issues, whereby juries that act in a more in a fashion that regulates the government are respecting not just a limited individual perspective and right, but also a larger body politic, a larger community ethos, if you will. And that's why I was suggesting that what you're doing here is of great importance. And I know that there's people listening that are very much deep into an attempt to produce something, you know, positive for the humanity. So we're going to produce something fruit, you know, some good fruit here, and we're going to do it under nature's God. But the issue is, we actually, if we pay attention to the details, the slight details, because that's where the devil's at. We'll notice that it's not enough to just come in at a perspective of private, like, you know, a jury that's just going to deal with one issue having to do with one family or one person, but then issues of a statewide or national concern are something different. That's called normative issues, and that was my entire point for bringing, for coming on the call tonight, is actually to bring up that one issue. And I think that's where you guys are focused on. Even though you claim right now to say that you're more concerned about private issues, right? I think that it's true to state that you're more concerned about the issues of national concern and statewide concern. Am I wrong about that, John?
Oh, we're looking at a national problem of the subversion, RICO. That's what look at, it would be wrong for us to come together as a grand jury and just try to deal with all of these different cases across the nation in every county and state and so on and so forth and every federal. That would be a terrible wrong. And for a grand jury to sit for years on end, that's a wrong too. But this grand jury, which is we the people that we formed together through National Liberty Alliance, which ultimately has a potential of over 6,000 jurists together collectively, and at any one given time, 6,000 could come together. But we never have that many, of course. We usually have a couple of hundred. But look, it would be wrong for us to continue in after we deal with subversion and the RICO. You see, once we get the win and we get them in court and we
there
deal with
go.
The cases that we've got, mm-hmm. now it's time to start delivering these cases into its proper federal districts and move them along
yes.
through them. Give it to those
yeah,
people.
Yeah, absolutely.
You see, but we need the critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
You see, once we get the power and the authority and the movement, we're going to get the critical mass. That is a no-brainer absolute, because people will come where the power is and where the
right.
job is and where the interest is and where people can do something. There's a lot of reasons why people would come. And so we could fill all these positions really quick, and then
mm-hmm.
these people can then call the grand juries within the federal districts where these crimes are committed, and they can deal with them on their level the best they can do. We'll give them whatever advice we can.
Love it.
We will give the juries as much advice as they
yep.
can, and they'll figure it out, and life will go on, and we'll be much better.
And John, you need to actually let's everyone stick together. Let's produce something quality, and you know what? You're going to create a source that other scholars and lawyers can actually look to back up their claims in the future when we need to back up a common law claim based on a jury verdict or something like that. So
right.
thank you for your time tonight on the call.
Well, you're welcome. And I'd like to just say that everything we need to be looked at is already in history. We have collected it together and put it onto our website. And I'm sure there's more we can bring. There's a lot of garbage out there And I've looked into, and I just wouldn't even bother bringing it up onto the website. Different books and stuff, I think it bore people to tears to begin with, and it really gets lost onto statutory processes after, at some point anyway. And we don't need to make law difficult. We don't need to make law boring. But we don't need to make law where you're just brought to tears looking at all this junk. We need to keep it exciting and moving and the work of the heart and the work of the facts. You know, that's what we need to do. You deal with the facts, and it's the law of the heart, and then there's principles. But, you know, when it comes to the government, then there's the Constitution. You don't need anything more than that. It's all simple. It's obvious. It's
true. But everybody remember this, that the jury has its best effect at the trial stage. Okay? That's it. On appeals, you're not having a jury. And neither are you having a jury at the Supreme Court level. Okay? So it's only at the trial court level where you really have.
Oh, hey, Jeremiah, let me fix you. I hit you up accidentally. Hold on. Go ahead. Finish off.
No problem. I was just saying basically that at the Supreme Court level and at the appeals level, it's not a jury trial. You see, and this is why what it's important to remember that once we create a jury verdict from the common law, right, that we issue an order to the local judge for whatever district it is or whatever, you know, territory it is, that they need to issue an order based on the common law jury verdict that.
Yeah, go ahead. Finish off.
I think he lost his bandwidth. He kind of like went.
Well, if you, I unmuted Brent and then he got muted. And did you just unmute Brent? Was he remuted?
No,
I don't know.
No, I didn't touch it. I just.
Okay, Brent, you here?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we're going to move over to Brent and then we'll come back to Q&A again. So let me introduce Brent. Brent Winters is the author in The Excellence of the Common Law. You can find his book on his website or Amazon. His website is commonlawyer.com, and he's going to speak to us tonight and teach us about, I think we're on the Declaration of Independence. Go right ahead, Brent.
Thank you. Thank you, John. This is Brent, Alan Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And the views and opinions I have may or may not comport with those of National Liberty Alliance, but I'm elated that they allow me to come on and say a few words, and we hope that everything I say will be taken in good faith and the folk will check it out for themselves to see if those things that I say are true in their humble, studied opinion. Well, the only remedy for lawlessness, and that's what we're facing, lawlessness, the only remedy is true law. There is no other remedy. I don't care how many people you shoot, how many people you jail or whip or club down or intimidate or dominate, still the only remedy for lawlessness is true law. And all those acts of violence are only temporary, just temporary things that can be used to stop people from hurting other people, from doing damage. It doesn't change the heart of a man. The heart, that means his core, his innermost being. That's what it takes to live in a world, in a country, I should say, where lawlessness does not prevail. And I know we'll never get rid of it in this life, a lawlessness. It's always around us. But we can, I think. I think we can pursue excellence and work toward the idea, and we've been there before, where lawlessness does not prevail, where those men that have a passion for what is right, that their attitudes will predominate, and there will be some decency about us, and we will have heroes, I'll use that word in a positive sense, to look up to. Indeed, a world without heroes would be ugly, and it is, and I've seen it, you're seeing it, it's getting more that way, where the hero is the anti-hero, the victim, and everybody looks up, well, they don't look up, they look down, and they want to be like the person that's on the bottom, and not aspire to something better and try to lift others up with himself. We're in the Declaration of 76. The Declaration of 76, we call it that. I don't think that this doesn't need to be said. I've discovered it does need to be said. People don't know. We've lost our grip. The Declaration of 76 is called the Declaration of 76 because it was signed in 1776. It's the document that kicked off, initiated our country, our Declaration of 76. We're going through it clause by clause, blow by blow. We're on paragraph number 11.
Excuse me one second, Brent.
Yes,
Brent, just
go
one
ahead.
Second.
Go ahead.
Gerard, are you here? Gerard, I just want to make sure you got the board.
I was just typing to you. I was a little slow. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you better speed it up. I'm sorry, Brent. Go right ahead.
Well, no, we're glad that there are fellows like you that are trying to keep track of the rest of us and make order out of otherwise disorder of what we're trying to do. So I'm glad if you had to interrupt, that's not a problem. But we're in paragraph 11 of our Declaration of 76, and it says this. He, that's speaking of King George III, who claimed to be king in England, but said he was emperor in his empire, and that included the American colonies. He, has made judges dependent upon his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He's made judges dependent upon him for their jobs and their pay. That's what this is saying here. If judges are dependent upon the executive, the president, for their job and their pay, well, they're really not judges, they're patsies. And administrative law judges, for instance, that's what they are. Clearly, administrative law judges, such as judges of the United States Tax Court, that's an administrative court, they are patsies. They are there to provide legitimacy, or the appearance of it, to the will of the government. In this case, no doubt, the executive branch, the political branch. They are there to do the political will of the man in power, or the party in power, the people in power, the powers that be. You say, well, that's terrible. It is. But I suppose there is some room for that, but I wouldn't know very much. I wouldn't think very much. I mean, we need judges of the judicial branch that are independent of anyone else. In law of the city countries, our country is a country of the law of the land. That's another name for due process. That's our common law. Article 6 of our Constitution says this Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Well, what that means is this Constitution, being a brief of common law government, is the law of the land, lifted from Magna Carta, law of the land. It means due process. What is due process? It's a process that is due and owing to all concerned, and that is our common law. The law of the land is our common law, and our common law is process-oriented, not result-oriented. If judges are dependent upon the powers that be for their job and their pay, then the powers that be tell them that the result, tell those judges the result they want, and they'd better get it. And if they don't get it, then they're fired, or they lose their pay, or they lower their pay, or they indict their wife or their mother-in-law or something. Those things really have happened to judges even now. Now, as a matter of law, judges in our country are not to be dependent upon the executive branch, the president, or the legislative branch. They are to be independent. See, that comes down to what we call the separation of powers, the separation of the three powers of government, the judicial, the legislative, and the executive. It's not that those powers of government can't agree with one another. They're one branch of government thinks the other one's right. They can agree. Every time the president signs a bill that comes up to his desk from the legislative branch, Congress, he's agreeing with them. There's nothing wrong with the branches of government agreeing, but they are free because of this thing, this common law teaching we call separation of powers. He is free to disagree if he thinks he needs to. And his oath, by the way, requires him to do that. It requires all of us to do it. That's just in government. All of us are to make our own independent judgments about what is right and what is wrong. Now, we may be wrong sometimes, but we're still to make our own independent judgment. And that's the power of America, and that's why America has become the greatest engine of wealth the world has ever known, because we have three co-equal branches of government. Co-equal, that means that the Supreme Court, the judicial branch, doesn't trump the other two branches. Its opinions are not dominant over the rest of the government, that the rest of government doesn't want those opinions to be dominant. It just all depends upon what the powers of government want to do. Do you remember when Obama, I won't call him president because I don't believe he was. I don't believe he was constitutionally qualified, but I remember his name. It was Obama, and he wanted to act like he was president. And when Congress wouldn't do what he wanted, he said, I have a pen and a telephone. I'll do what I want. Now, as a matter of, if he really were president, as a matter of our Constitution, if he really thought that the rest of government was doing the unconstitutional thing, it was his duty then to do the constitutional thing no matter what they did. No matter what Congress did, no matter what the Supreme Court did. And the same is true of them. I can't overemphasize that. Our branches, the three branches of government are co-equal. And by the way, the member of the jury is independent of mine. He owes nobody nothing except to do right. To do right, to do true law, to follow the true law, regardless of what anybody else says to him, regardless of who may try to intimidate him in the jury room. He is to do what he believes right in his own independent judgment. He took an oath to do that. That's why we call them jurors. The word juror means, it's a Latin word, it means oath taker. What is your oath? Well, it is to act independently of all others. That's what it is. I mean, if you can agree with them if you want, but then again, on the other hand, if they're wrong, you have a duty to disagree with them. Well, in all of the world except our common law country, and there's only about five of them in the world, the English-speaking world pretty much, England, the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the other little jural entities like Belize and places like that that are under protection of those countries, America, Samoa, for example, all of those are common law jurisdictions. But all the rest of the world is under the principles of the law of the city as opposed to the law of the land. And in those countries, in those, we call them civil law, city law countries, a judge in those countries is a member of the civil service ranks. He isn't even a lawyer. He's trained special to be a judge. In America, by common law tradition, judges are men that are lawyers. That means they've studied the law. No, that does not mean that they have to have a license as a lawyer. There have been Supreme Court justices that were not licensed attorneys. There have been federal judges within my lifetime that were not licensed attorneys. I had a fellow I worked for once, and when he got out of law school, he went to clerk for a federal judge in New Mexico. He graduated law school in the state of New York at Cornell. He went, after he passed the bar and all, then he went and clerked for a federal judge in New Mexico. And this federal judge in New Mexico, President Harry Truman had appointed him. Not only was he not a licensed lawyer, a licensed attorney, he'd never been to law school. Not only had he never been to law school, he'd never been to college. And not only had he never been to college, he'd never even been to high school or grade school. He was homeschooled long time ago. His family lived in Mexico. He was American, but he grew up in Mexico. Never went to formal schooling. But this fellow told me that when he listened to a case, he'd ask the clerks, because they had an idea what the procedure was, things he didn't understand, and he would go read AMJUR, American Jurisprudence. he'd tell this clerk, this fellow I knew that I worked for, tell him what he wanted, and he'd write it up and try to support his positions if he could. That was his job. But what I'm saying is, judges are not to be dependent, no matter who they are, they're not to be dependent upon anyone else for their job. That's why our Constitution says that the pay of federal judges cannot be reduced during their time in office. Well, if someone could reduce the pay of a federal judge, he could maybe control that federal judge, and that's not allowed because judges of the three branches of government, they're all to be independent of mine. But our courts, of all places, are to be independent of mine. They are to follow the true law. Very important, very indispensable part of our common law tradition, by the way, that's pretty much unwritten in our law. It's just our tradition. And we follow it amazingly, even though we don't even know why. Our common law, at every point, every detail, every level, is customary to us. And our courts and our government, we don't even give it a thought. I'm in court now, and we have oral testimony. Oral testimony, which is necessary for a public trial. Again, those are common law details that aren't written so much as understood. Our Constitution says that trials are to be public. Well, then that demands that they be oral. They can't be in writing if they're public. They can't be open and available, the proceedings, to everybody unless they are. All of those little kind of things are important. But in the rest of the world, a judge is nothing more than a rubber stamp substituting the will of the state for law. Let me repeat that. In the rest of the world, the law of the city world, a judge is no more than a rubber stamp substituting the will of the powers that be for law. He is a kept man. A judge is not to be a kept man, but they are. In fact, in the rest of the world, the fellows they call judges are not judges at all. They're just enforcers of state codes, enforcers of whatever the legislation says. Well, you say, Brent, but that's the law. If Congress or the legislature says that's the law, and judges are to follow it. Do you really believe that if you were a judge, you would be bound to follow some of the absolutely asinine, crazy, destructive things that Congress has tried to put in legislation for your state? Between 5,500 federal crimes, or 5,500 and 6,000 federal crimes, when our Constitution only provides four areas of criminal jurisdiction to the general government in Washington, D.C. One of the reasons I have friends that are accomplished trial lawyers, and I've said to them, why don't you throw your hat in for judge? Tell the state senator, the Senate, U.S. senator, that you want to be considered for appointment to a federal judgeship. My friends say, no way would I do that. Well, why not? Because my conscience and my sanity could not abide enforcing the law that those fellows think they've got to enforce. You say, well, it's their duty. Listen, it's nobody's sworn duty, even if they take an oath as a judge, to support what is lawless just because Congress says it's law. I believe that with all of my heart. And I believe that when an attorney takes his oath of office, and he does, just like the vice president's oath, the state legislator's, the congressman's oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, by the way, that's the oath of attorneys in the United States and every jurisdiction I know of. When they take that oath, that demands that they follow true law. The law of the land law, as our Constitution has set it forth, our Constitution being a brief common law government. I used to be shocked more than I am now. I guess I'm over it, or maybe I'm hardened to it. But I was just, even though I'm hardened to it, I was asking myself today, I can't believe that federal prosecutors, state prosecutors, and judges do what they do. How in the world do they sleep at night? We have judges that support all the madness, and we've been talking, of course, about the trial of the Bundys. And I'm convinced that some of these judges just want a job, and they don't want the powerful people that are behind the government to murder them or send them to jail for tax evasion or murder part of their family. it almost seems like there's something that controls them, because they do things that are so contrary to what they have sworn to uphold. Well, maybe it's just another lesson to me. I want to believe people are fundamentally good. I know better. I know better as a matter of law. They are not fundamentally good. But it still befuddles me to see how black the hearts of some people are. And I know I sound like I'm quoting Jezebel herself, Hillary. But it is true. The very thing that she would accuse others of, that's what she is. But there's some black hearts, and I suppose that's what the Bible says when Jeremiah says, the heart of man is desperate. The heart, his core, desperate. Wicked above all things. And then he asks rhetorically, who could possibly know it? Really, what's in the heart of man, how evil it is. Well, I don't mean to be depressing. I mean to encourage you. I don't care how bad it gets around you. It's up to you to do right. Me, to do right. And not be pressured into doing otherwise. Well, it says here that one of the reasons we separated ourselves from Britain was because the emperor, the king, who was said he was emperor here, made judges dependent upon his will alone. His will alone? You say to yourself, well, what about the law? Aren't they supposed to support the law? Well, here's the hitch. See, this fellow, King George III, being emperor, his will becomes law. People have said to me, well, you talk about the law of the city, Brent. That doesn't include the Islamic countries and Islamic law. They don't have Justinian's Code, the law of Rome. Oh, well, no, maybe not in name, but you know those Arab people, they've lived like that for centuries, just like the law of the city. I remember learning when I was a child about them, Ali Baba and the Seven Thieves, and I learned about the saying among the Arab people, the Islamic people. They would say to their sultans, your every wish is my command. In other words, the weakest desires you have are law. To me, they're law. They're commands. Well, that's the way it is. That's what King George was saying. Now, my will is law. What is law, by the way? Here's another way to define it. Law is the will of the sovereign. Who's the sovereign? Well, that's the controlling question, isn't it? If God is the sovereign, if the maker of heaven and all of earth and all that in them is, if me and you is the sovereign, well, his will is law. And by the way, he is the sovereign, the only true sovereign, the allodial landlord. And he owes nobody nothing. Everyone else is a created thing, a creature to him. Oh, not to him, just in fact, we are creatures. We owe him. He doesn't owe us anything. And his will is law. And it brings a consequence to us. Well, it says here that the judges are dependent upon his will alone. And our declaration charges George III with violating common law separation of powers requirement by substituting his will for that of the judges. Now, if King George, back in that day, George III, were able to do away with courts altogether, or if he were unable, I should say, you know, if the president, for example, said to the judges, you're all out of office. Well, if he were able to do that, he wouldn't have to worry about it. But that looks too ugly, you see. That politically, that wouldn't work. People would be too upset, so he tries to find another way around that to still get what he wants. And the way King George III did it was he made judges dependent on him alone for their jobs and pay. Magna Carta. That means big paper. Magna, big, carta, paper. And it was a big paper. Magna Carta requires judges to follow the law of the land. Listen to what it says. It says, that's the plural of majesty, King John speaking, him and all the folks that inherit the crown, called the plural of majesty, we will not make, that means appoint, justices, constables, sheriffs, or bailiffs, now watch this, who do not know the law of the land and mean to observe it well. There you have it. the two requirements of common law for judges. Two requirements. Number one, they must know the law of the land. That doesn't mean know about it. That means know it. There's a difference. It has to become part of you. It has to be your second nature. They must know the law of the land. Well, what's the law of the land? Well, there's that phrase, and those that drafted our Constitution of the United States lifted that phrase right out of this, what I read you here. And I'm translated, of course, into English. The Magna Carta was written in Latin so that all of the world, all of the educated world, could read it. It was an open statement drafted by Stephen Langton. And we have taken that phrase, lex terra, in the Latin, lex terra, law of the land or land law, we've taken that phrase and put it in our Constitution, and our Supreme Court has observed that it really does mean due process. That's what it means. Law of the land means due process, common law due process. Well, what's that? That is the way we go about doing things. We are, I said it before, I need to say it again, our common law is process-oriented, not result-oriented. The important thing to our common law is to stay the course of process and not worry about the result. The result will take care of itself. We don't know what it's going to be. Let the chips fall where they may out there. Once we follow this process, the result, that's why God says in the Bible, if you follow my way, W-A-Y, that means his process, his course of doing things, don't worry, don't be afraid of other people. He says this to jurors, don't be afraid of people. Because if you follow my process, the result that it produces is mine, not yours. All you do is follow the process. Don't be afraid of them. You're not the one making the judgment. And if you follow the process, the judgment will be rendered up. And it will always be the same, but you must follow the process that is due. And that's why we call it the law, of course, of the land. It is the way we, the way, W-A-Y, the way we do things. Not what we do, how we do it. And that's what our Constitution is all about. Our Constitution is a document that stresses process. Here's how our government is to operate. It is a course of process, and that's why those that have gone before us call our common law, many ways to describe it, they call it the course of the common law, the course, the way, the path. Know the law of the land, that's the first requirement of a judge. And second, at common law, the second requirement of a judge is, and mean to observe it well. To observe what? The law of the land. What is the law of the land? Due process. The way we do things. The course of our common law starts with notice to the other party, allowing enough time for him to give a meaningful opportunity to be heard. It allows for the process then demands the jury be impaneled. But before that, in a criminal matter, demands that the grand jury be impaneled and render up its indictment. Excuse me, getting late where I am, I guess. But there's a course that is to be followed. It includes so many things, depending upon the circumstance, that our Supreme Court has rightly observed. We don't always know the completeness of what due process is due, what is required, until we're faced with the circumstance. And what is due process? Well, it is what is fair to all concerned. Fair, not equal. I didn't say equal. We're not an egalitarian world, and our common law is not an egalitarian tradition, looking for equality all the time. No, it's looking for fairness. Well, why doesn't it look for that equality? Because equality is impossible for men who have been delegated the powers and the responsibilities of government. It's impossible for us to achieve equality. And add to that this, all men may be created equal before the law, but they are not equal. No, Are they of equal worth? Yes, all men are of equal worth. But are they equal? No, they aren't equal. We're all different. Apples and oranges are not equal. They're just as valuable, and some depends on the markets, I suppose, but they ought to be just as valuable. But they're not the same thing. In order to be equal, something has to be the same thing. So what we seek is fair play. That's the words our court uses to describe due process. They describe it as fair play, a fair fight. Well, mean to observe it well, to follow the course of due process. Well, judges, I'm quoting John Adams, ought never be dependent upon any man or body of men. Judges ought never be dependent upon any man or body of men. But judges are to follow due process, not the government's will. And so-called exceptions to this vindicate, always, even if there appear to be exceptions, vindicate due process, never change it or violate it. Well, that's enough for this evening, John, Gerard, whoever's there. Thanks for waiting on me.
Thank you very much. Okay, very good. And that was well said. And we've all experienced the opposite end of that, I guess.
Anyway, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what they do. They don't give you your process. That's the problem today. So I'm gonna unmute. I don't know. We got a 207 area code. I don't know who that is, but I'm gonna unmute him here. Go ahead. You've been unmuted. We don't have that many people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get in, now's the time. But anyway, we got.
Thank you, Gerard, for taking the call. I just had a quick question. It seems a little... Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
I certainly can, yeah.
A little distracted. I think someone has an open mic that's playing some music. But my question's a little less relevant after Brent's excellent presentation. I had gone into the queue when John was discussing and answering a question earlier. I was wondering, when we talked about empowering our sheriff to impanel grand juries, and as much as I agree with our position as an organization on that idea, I just wondered if we've considered or if we ought to consider putting some county grand juries in our 3,133 counties around our nation and start to create precedent of complaints to take to the grand jury and actually begin a process with that. I mean, John made some very stern statements that I like to hear, but I just wondered if we made those same stern statements to our current county attorneys, if we might be able to win or get some wins in some county somewhere in our nation to get some of our concerns or complaints or issues before a grand jury. So I was just
actually
throw that out there to either you or John on that idea.
Yeah, well, ultimately that's where it's going anyway. I mean, look, right now the juries and the grand juries are like puppets because of the process that they're using to administer them. When we get four administrators per county, then the grand juries in the county will be assembled. Now, don't get me wrong, just because we have administrators doesn't mean that a prosecutor can't bring a case to the grand jury. You know, that's one way that the cases get there. And usually, you know, with a prosecutor, that's how all those other cases come in. But, you know, the people have to have the ability to go in and bring their stuff to the grand jury. And the grand jury also has to have the freedom to investigate any place and anybody reports a crime. So ultimately, we are planning on bringing grand juries in every county. I mean, they won't sit there, but they will be picked per case. And once they're picked and they're serving a term, they also should be available for anybody that wants to come in and bring them more information, you know? So I guess that's the process that we're working towards, is the long and the short of it.
Right. I guess my question was thinking that I understand that's our long-term plan, but I didn't know if we might be able to begin brainstorming. I know we can't do this in a week. There's other projects on the drawing board right now, but could we consider as an organization moving forward with trying to put things on the on a shorter-term position and actually brainstorm about possibilities of creating something in the shorter run?
Well, we can't come into the system that they have when they're not listening to us and try to put a grand jury in there until we're in authority. You know what I mean? Now, if somebody calls for a special prosecutor in a certain instance, we could go in tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? If the situation arises and they're going to recognize our grand jury, or they're going to call for a special prosecutor, and that prosecutor, that should be a common law grand jury on that particular case. You know what I mean? And then once they're assembled, they have the full rights and authority of what a jury or a grand jury does. You know, people can bring them. That's one of the things that they don't like to happen. That's what happened in Florida. Somebody was trying to bring a grand jury foreman the knowledge of a crime, and they wouldn't allow them access in that whole Terry Trussell case that went all over the place. But, yeah, I don't know how we could do it any shorter until somebody recognizes our authority and is willing to let us do the process that has always been done from the beginning of this whole system. You know, they were very good at letting grand juries come in and investigate the government and go through accounts, and that was done regularly. Every so often, the grand jury would go through the books of the county and just make sure things were being done right. I don't know if they're still doing that. You know, they got tons and tons and tons of printed grand jury reports. And, you know, just because the grand jury comes in and does a report, it doesn't mean there's an indictment. Like, sometimes the grand jury will make a prescription. But, you see, they don't like any of that. This is what they've been working to get rid of, because they want to control it. They want the fox controlling the hen house. And they can't have the people controlling things when they want to control it. And therein is the problem. That you know, they really don't want to root out the crime, because if you start rooting the crime out, you, generally speaking, you're going to find out that they're the problem. The ones that are in power are the problem. That they're profiting from this. You know, they little by little, they've made certain precedences and certain perks and things where they get paid and they get kickbacks, and hence you got the system we have. So, yeah, I mean, we would do it as quick as we could, as long as it was facilitated in the proper methods. I mean, we asked Jeff Sessions for a special prosecutor. We asked Donald Trump to do it. And that would be a fast track for us, because that would put us in that county at that issue, and that would put a feather in our cap so that they would start using the common law process. But, you know, they're death afraid of what they call a runaway grand jury, where the grand jury is investigating this and that and the other thing, and doing things that the prosecutor had no intention for them to do. And that's what it is now. You got the prosecutors that are running everything. We got a local judge here. Well, he was a local judge. He was a prosecutor. And then he was appointed, he got elected a county judge. And this is the guy that we went into that time when we had some trouble with the county clerk with our paperwork. And he had stepped down and became a prosecutor again. And when I asked him why he did that, he said, the prosecutor is the most powerful guy in the whole county. He's more powerful than the judge. And he understood that. He played... you know, both sides of that card. And he went back to being a prosecutor. He said, because I feel I can be more effective as a prosecutor than I can as a judge. And technically, he's right, because a judge is supposed to just administer the law. He's supposed to be non-biased, where a prosecutor can take an issue and run with it. A judge cannot. You know what I mean? Because he has to be neutral. He can't be looking to root things out. It has to be brought to him. he's not supposed to have an opinion one way or another, and he's supposed to administer the law. So I guess he's absolutely right that the prosecutor is the most powerful man in the county, and actually this is what we're up against. Those are the guys that don't want us in there, because those are the guys that are watching the hen house. So look, if we get an opportunity where they'll do it the right, using the right process, we'd go tomorrow. You know, it's not, like John said, you don't need a bunch of educated people to be on the jury. We need 8 hours with them. And like, look, if this is the law, you're going to rule on the law. You're also going to rule on whether you think it's a good law or a bad law. You see, they don't want them to do that. That's too much control for the people as far as they're concerned. They want this city law. They want, you know, I used to be on a town board, and they would come in and they'd say, oh, you can't do that because, you know, the ex-cops were the worst. They'd sit there and say, penal code such and such says this and that and this and that. I said, well, let me tell you something. If I was going to sit up here and just enforce penal code on the town board, then you don't need me. You need an IBM punch card with the holes in the right place, and you stick it in. You say this crime has been committed, and you get your answer. You don't need a human being in that case, and that's where they're at. If the holes line up on the punch card, then guess what? Then we know what the result is. And unfortunately, that's the system we have now, and they like it. And the reason they like it is because it's a system of money. It's all about balancing the scales. It's all about commerce, and that's all any of this stuff is about. It's about them making money. That's what it's boiled down to now. And they're preying off the people, and it's up to us to stop that, because they're bleeding us, basically. I mean, and it goes from traffic court all the way up through the probate court and everything. You know, any place there's money, it starts to stink. And that's what they've allowed to happen. And that's because we don't have control anymore. You got prosecutors who basically are political animals because they're elected, and they get lobbied to, and they're result oriented, like Brent says. You know, they tell them what they want, the result that they want, and that's what they go get. And then we got the saying, oh, he can prosecute a ham sandwich because he can. So I don't know when we can do it. Look, it's certain, anybody that wants to move, if you get a county that's smaller and maybe not so corrupt, where you could, you know, the smaller places are easier to take over. You need less people, and maybe you have more of a fundamental background there. Some of these small communities should really be the first ones to be able to pierce the veil and bring in a common law grand jury, you know? And that's I think that's the way it's going to happen, you know?
I wonder if it would be possible. I know we have a bunch of projects on the drawing board right now, but if other people who might be listening hear of items that could be taken to their county attorney, if we started to build a process, I'm thinking of some things we might be able to do right here in my own state or in our small other neighboring states here, where we could make a process of bringing things to our county attorney. I wonder if we do fall on deaf ears, or if we are, you know, if we run into obstacles, if it would be possible to move those requests for access to the grand jury into the federal court. If it's denied, could we then make a due process claim moving forward? I wouldn't mind revisiting this in other weeks. I'll try to make my question more succinct moving forward, but I just wanted to put that idea out there in case there's other people listening.
Right, yeah. I understand.
Very good. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. I'm going to go to the next person in the queue. It says Mary from PA. Okay. Go ahead, Mary. You've been unmuted. Mary from PA.
Can you hear me?
I can now.
Hi. This is Felicia from Florida. How are you this evening?
Good. You jumped up there. It said Mary, and then Felicia was up there. How's it going, Felicia?
It's going. I have a question.
Uh-huh.
What do you do when you file the grand jury documents into the court system, and you file documents to the courts from the sheriff's office, and you hand deliver the sheriff the grand jury's documents for them to tell you it's not a legal case, and for them to actually put a notice on your door and saying you have 24 hours to get out? even though the sheriff's office knew about it months ago and the court system knew about it months ago. What do you do about that?
Well, that's what we're fighting, and that's the tough part. And the trouble is when you get down to the wire like that, they can steamroll you. When they overrun your due process, the only thing that you can do is take it into the higher court and put them in the case. And then you're talking about going to a federal court. Now, if you went and put a case in the federal court tomorrow, I don't know that a federal judge will give you an injunction. You'd have to have a real good story for him to hold back the county. I mean, I don't know who's foreclosing on you, if it's a bank or a mortgage company or who's doing it. But
the bank sold it, and then they sold it to a private auction. And I was told that I needed to get out, or they was going to file it by the person that so-called bought it in a private auction. And I turned around and got a 24-hour notice from the bank saying that person now owns the house, writ of possession, and I need to be out in 24 hours.
When they first sold it to that person, though, was that did they say you were behind on the payments, or what was the excuse they used to foreclose in the first place?
I've already filed all this information with the grand jury.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not familiar.
And I have documents from the grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I filed that into the court system, and they're still proceeding without, because remember, my bank was calling it a letter and not a summons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing you can do is add them into the case and sue them personally, and I don't know if they're telling you have 24 hours. I don't know if you'll be able to stop them. You know what I mean? I mean, that doesn't mean you can't come back. You can't file that stuff and get into court and get an injunction after the fact. But in the meantime, they're going to come in and do whatever. Look, if they know you're proactive, they know you're fighting them, so they're going to move it as quick as they can. They want to get you off balance. They don't want to let you catch your breath.
Well, what I did was he told me I had till tomorrow to move out. So what I did today is I went in and I filed the paperwork, same paperwork again from the grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
And I taped it to the door.
You taped it to the door?
Yes, I did. I taped it right on the door. So when he gets there tomorrow, because I spoke to the deputy sheriff and he said, well, you know, I'm just doing my job. I said, well, you know, the sheriff, I tried to get in contact with him. I also sent him a letter with the grand jury's documents and spoke to them in between that. I think it was since June of this year. So he was well informed, but he went along and, you know, did
that's
what
because
the,
he's not educated in the process. That's, you know. So, I guess Jim had sent me that the court had sent you a writ that was rubber stamped by the court clerk. What was that writ?
A writ of possession from the senior judge, the same senior judge that was supposed to be indicted on the grand jury's documents, which they never answered.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so we actually set up an indictment on this judge?
It's been since June, and I don't know if it was, because I think it was Judge Kahn did something.
No, probably not, because I don't think we had any recent indictments that, because we have to all meet, and I don't recall.
Well, the same judge that was supposed to answer the show calls is the same judge that signed the writ of possession.
Mm-hmm.
From the same bank that never loaned me any money.
So that's the gist of this. They never loaned you any money, and they're foreclosing on the money they didn't loan you, right?
They never loaned me.
So did you get any kind of forensic audit done? Like they were auditing these banks within that case with the robo signing. That's what this sounds like to me.
I can tell you this, is when I went to get an official copy of the title, that was transferred.
Mm-hmm.
I seen a whole bunch of names because the title, my name was the only one on it with the person that witnessed it. But when I got the new title, it was a whole bunch of names, and you could tell it was white out on it. And then when I got the 24-hour notice on my door, somebody changed the date. They used white out. The stamp was the 5th, but they changed it to the 4th with white out. And it's like, you know, all this fabrication is what's going on. And they actually put me in contact with the sheriff that was supposed to come out tomorrow and kick me out. And I told him, I said, this is not right. And, you know, I broke him down to the point where he was like, well, I'm just doing my job. I have a car payment. I have, you know, I hate to do this. And I hope you're not, you know, going to give me any trouble because I can.
Tell him I'm going to sue you. I'm going to own your house.
Tell him, pretty much.
Look at your job. Your job is to protect me when I'm right. And I'm right. And you know I'm right. And you're being a coward because you're
sheriff.
Not holding on. When he tells you I got a car payment and all this, that means he understands that he's guilty. Well, he's saying if I do my job, they're going to fire me. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, but the sheriff is the real coward because I wanted to speak directly to him, and he gave me two other people that wouldn't even file my case. They wouldn't even give me a case number and tried to say that I wasn't even there, even though I signed in, which I have pictures of. It's like, okay, you guys called me. I'm supposed to be in contact with this lieutenant, and then I come back, and you say I was never there. And then I look at the paper where I actually signed, and I have this stuff documented to the letter to the sheriff, and they received it because I sent it certified, and I hand-delivered it on the 18th of last month, and they still signed for my house to go into foreclosure, to kick me out.
Right. Wait a minute,
so,
I'm getting a sheriff.
He told me, the lieutenant or whatever, it says that he was just doing his job.
Well,
he went from giving me a trespassing or giving me a citation to, am I going to give you any trouble and we can go have coffee afterwards.
Yeah, as he steals your house.
Right.
You see, I guess where the problem lays with this thing is because that judge said that we're dismissed on our case, and we gave him a writ of error, and it hasn't been addressed yet. So when the sheriff went up to Pacer, it reads the case is dismissed. So as far as they're concerned, none of that.
But it was actually, I gave them the paperwork before it was, so they had already known about it months before. 1 month before it was, they knew about it, and it was an open case.
Right, but he was unwilling to act, and so then he waited. Recently, he must have went. He went up there, and he checked it. He checked the docket and saw that it was dismissed, and that's why he feels comfortable laying back now. Because as far as he's concerned, there is no case up there. You know
but
what I'm
he
saying?
Received. I hand delivered these documents way before that, and
right.
I have the voicemail.
And that's when he should have done his job. But meanwhile, he drug his feet. Until they dismissed the case. And now you're down to 0 hour, and he's gone back in and looked at that, and he feels comfortable now. The fact that they dismissed the case is what he's laying on right now.
Well, he can feel comfortable all he wants, but in the end, he's going to have to repay for what.
Absolutely. You've got to add him and the judges all got to be added to this case. You know,
but the main thing is that the judge that signs is the same judge that illegally foreclosed without due process of law.
Right, non-judicial foreclosure, right?
Yeah, it's the same judge that signed the paperwork to kick me out.
Right.
Same judge. And I told that guy, I said, you know what? I said, you know, the Constitution is the law of the land. And if that sheriff can't abide by that, I told him, I said, maybe you should run for sheriff. And he was like, no, I'm going to retire. I'm getting ready to retire.
I got everybody that doesn't want to do the right thing, right?
Yeah, but my thing is that, you know, here it is, you know, as I, you know, go through all this and I realize how my judicial process procedures has been violated, my rights has been violated, and nobody seems to care. All they can say is I'm doing my job.
Right, and they're not
doing
their job.
And you know, the sheriff's office of constitutional law, so they're breaking the code as well. So it's like, why are you even in position?
Right. Right. Well.
So right now, you know, I spent all weekend moving everything out of my house into a storage unit, and I don't even have nowhere to live.
That's terrible. And your only recourse, I believe, at this point, is to bring it. It's to sue them personally and bring it in on the court. But that's not going to help you. In the meantime, you're going to be out of your house, unfortunately.
Yeah,
They're going to owe you damages to restore you. You know.
Yeah, but the thing is when I had my first interview with them, I think it was Mrs. Rodriguez. She was like, "Oh, we'll pay. Oh, we'll pay." So she automatically said that they will pay. And that was my first visit, and that was months ago. When I looked at her, I was like, why you just can't follow the Constitution? You're a deputy sheriff.
Right. And that's what they're not doing.
Sometimes I think a lot of people in these positions are just doing their job, and they don't really believe in the Constitution.
They certainly don't have the wherewithal to uphold it, especially when it goes against what the powers that be want. They're afraid that they'll lose their job, just like the sheriff said, well, I got a car payment. That's supposed to make you feel better? I mean, that's an excuse that he doesn't belong in office if he's worried about himself and he's not upholding the law of the land. So in other words, he's bribable and manipulative, you know, being able to manipulate him because he's not upholding the law of the land. So he's basically implicating himself. Well, you know, I got a car, I got this, I got that. But
he's like, I'm just doing my job. I'm sorry, but, you know, I will be there at 9. And I said, well, I will be there. And he was like, are you going to get me in trouble? And I'm like, for what? And then you're going to have to give me my house back. But I'm not going to be inside the house. Because I've never been to jail. I don't want to go.
No, you don't want to go. It's too hard. You won't be able to fight from there at all. I mean, it's hard enough that you got to fight without a house now. But if you're in jail, you can't do anything. They won't even give you a pencil or a piece of paper if they want to shut you down. You know?
Yeah, but, you know, it's so unfortunate. This guy is telling me, you know, he has a car payment, he has a mortgage, and he has kids. And I understand all that. But at some point, they have to build moral compass because we all know right from wrong. So we all know right from wrong.
Well, when he put his hand on the Bible, he didn't say, I swear to uphold the Constitution, except if it gets in the way of my car payment. You know what I mean? And basically, that's what he's saying. Oh, yeah, I'm going to uphold the Constitution for the people unless my job is in danger, right? So, in other words, he's no better than a common criminal, if that's what he's saying. I mean, right now, he feels comfortable because, as far as he's concerned, there's no case in the court, in the federal court.
Oh, it's there. They just
no. I mean, our case.
They don't want to see it.
The case that we filed in the federal court, that Judge Khan said was dismissed. We haven't. We're still playing with that paperwork.
But they knew about it ahead of time. They knew about this ahead of time.
They also knew that they could stall and get to a point where he was going to throw us out based on his stupid, technicalities, saying that, you know, we're a corporation and all this other baloney, and that would take a couple of months, and by that time the foreclosure would go. Believe me, they understand all this stuff. They know how to stall, and they know how to drag their feet, and they know how to steamroll even. That's exactly what they did.
But they knew ahead of time. So they had already knew, and I put it into public records. They already knew. I had delivered these things directly to them. Mm-hmm. And I have a voicemail where I was called and said, oh, we're going to, send you to so-and-so lieutenant, And then they never called. I talked to him, and they never called me back. And then I went down there and for him to tell me how, you know, the Constitution and God. And he was like, God has nothing to do with it. He told me God had nothing to do with it.
God had nothing to do with it, huh? Boy, I can tell him, you're going to be surprised when you stand in front of him. You know? God had nothing to do with it.
Well, my thing is, you know, I've been put in a position where I thought ahead of time, and I did exactly what I thought I needed to do, and I did it, and they still, it's like they don't care. And I'm sure a lot of people's hands are getting greased out of this, but, you know, like my brother always told me, you cannot take all your stuff in a hearse to the graveyard. It's just not going to happen. There's not going to be a U-Haul truck following you to the graveyard with all your stuff. So, you know, all these worldly possessions, you know, that people think they're gaining, they're going to lose it.
That's right.
You see it?
But I don't appreciate, you know, the position they put me in, and I try to do the right thing. And it's like, wow.
Yeah. So there's nothing you can do in the short term, but you gotta not give up, and you gotta be like a bulldog now, going after both the judge and the sheriff.
Oh my God!
And you gotta hold them personally responsible. And we're gonna be talking about that because we also stumbled across the methodology for holding them personally responsible when they break due process. And that's something that we're gonna be investigating, to take these lower court people and make them responsible for the laws that they're breaking. And that,
because
and that
it's been filed in federal court, and you know, from my knowledge, you know, based on what Mr. Khan did, it's still in the federal courts, and they really don't have any jurisdiction, and the sheriff's office really don't have any jurisdiction to even kick me out.
Well, the way they see it is he dismissed the case, and there is no case. I mean, if you go in, it probably only runs to that last paper, and then it says case is dismissed. That's what the sheriff wants in. He doesn't care.
When I spoke to I called up there, and I was like, what is this 24-hour notice to get out? And, you know, they transferred me to the guy that signed the documents, and he was like, so what's your case number? I was like, they didn't give me one. But I have a phone call that's recorded saying that I was reported to the sheriff, directed me to a certain lieutenant, and they never gave me a case. All they did was listen to me. They didn't do nothing. They wouldn't even give me a case number for it.
And that's all they want to do. They don't want to do anything that's, you know. Look, I don't know who has designs on your house and stuff, but all that, these guys all work together when they target a house. You know what I mean?
They can work together, but in the end, they have to stand alone.
That's right. That's right. So anyway, at this point, I think the only thing that can be done in the short term, anyway, would be to bring these guys in on the carpet, personally responsible for moving under color of law. You know, I don't know. We'll have to discuss how that's going to get done. You know.
Well, what I did today before the so-called come out tomorrow at 9 is re-submitted the grand jury's documents and had it stamped, and that's what I posted on the door for them to see at 9 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah, and that corrupt judge is going to go over there, and he's going to stamp it, and he's going to stay dismissed. And the sheriff's going to feel comfortable with that rubber stamp that the judge has given him. That's what he's operating under. He's just a lackey for the court right now, this guy. You know what I mean?
He can do what he do, but he's going to be held accountable as well.
That's what you got. That's the proper answer right there, and that's the proper attitude right now. And speak with authority. And you do what you got to do. But, you know, you think you got a job and you got a house, but when I get done with you, you know, you probably won't have either. So you should think about that. You know?
Yes, sir. I think I need to actually file a list pendants on the property because, you know, I'm thinking that he's going to try to sell it. That's mother's
headache. Yeah, yeah. Well,
he got a lot of cleaning up to do, though. He has a lot of cleaning up to do when he walks in there.
Well,
they're going to be like, she left this house like this? I sure did. Because this is my house. And I told him, I said, he's like, well, I'm going to have to kick you out anyway. I'm sorry, but I have to do my job. And I said, how are you going to kick me off my own property?
He doesn't get it.
He's like, I'm sorry, but I have car payments and mortgage payments.
Well, the list pendant says that there's an action on it, right? Isn't that what the list pendant says? They can't move forward because there's a dispute still on the deed?
That's what I need to file.
Yeah, see if you can get it done. I don't know if they'll do it or not. They're going to give you trouble with that because they know that that's a stall tactic, so to speak.
It's okay. My nephew worked for he's actually a news broadcaster, and I've been trying to get in contact with him so he can share my story because it needs to be heard. So, not just for me, but for a lot of people that have lost their homes because of this fraudulent activity.
And that's going to be part of your success, too, if you can get your story out locally. You know what I mean? Because, unfortunately, it is the court of public opinion, and you do have to get that word out, and that's what makes them squirm. If they know that you're touching people in the public, you know, that's what we got Crystal over in Connecticut. She has all kinds of people she's teaching, and they know that she's a force, and that's why they're scared of her. Because she talks to everybody, and she just has a knack for bringing people into these things, and they're afraid of that. They don't, you know, they work well in darkness. They don't work well in light, and so it's up to you to shine the light on this. But in the meantime, get your list pendants or whatever you can throw at them to slow them down.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to write a new affidavit of everything that happens, and tomorrow when they come, I'm going to be videotaping it.
Right. Wow. Well, you're going to have anybody else there besides you?
I'm not going to be inside the house, but I'm going to be outside the house because I'm not going to jail. And I already know where my property line is. I mean, I mow more than my property because it's a corner lot. So if he says that I'm on private property, I'm like, no, I'm in a common area.
Right. Well, God bless you, Felicia. Keep us posted up to date with what happens tomorrow. I want to know.
Yes, sir, I will. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Thank you, Felicia. Bye-bye. Have a good night. Yeah. An exotic woman on the bed. Now, okay. Is the high price for you asked for, or is she okay, let me hit the next question here.
Hey, Gerard, how are you?
Yeah. Hey, good.
This is Brad from Pennsylvania.
Yes.
I've been listening to you guys tonight. You guys hit on something that I thought was really key that I think needs to be looked at again. Have you heard of Dr. Thomas Rudd? Or is it
Thomas?
Rudd? R-U-D-D?
Not sure. Rudd sounds familiar, but I don't know why. It's not.
Well, he was actually a coroner. A county coroner.
Well,
hello?
I hit the wrong button and I knocked him out there. Get back in the queue.
Hello?
Who do I have here?
You got Johnny.
Okay.
I'm gonna make this quick, all right? I wrote I was listening to your call some weeks ago, and I thought I'd take it upon myself to write a letter to President Trump about what I thought what a lousy job Jeff Sessions was doing. I mean, personally speaking, the guy's what? He's in office, what, 10 months? He hasn't made any headway about restoring constitutional law into any of the courtrooms across the country. You know, and I just made it known that it was a really, you know, piss-poor job. I didn't say those words, but, you know, I was kind of angry about it. And they sent me a letter back saying, oh, they're reviewing my email. That was about a month ago. I heard nothing from it. My comment is this. If we get enough people to write the White House, you know, and just say, you know, how unlawful it is for this man to be a head of the Department of Justice and make our grievances known that this man, he should at least try, you know, to restore constitutional law back in our courtrooms. I mean, this guy, you know, Donald Trump's saying he wants to drain the swamp. He's not going to drain the swamp if he doesn't get constitutional law back into these courts.
Right, right.
And I think if we get enough people, you know, what, you got 5,000 members? You get 5,000 members on in your organization to just write an email to the president, I'm sure they're going to have an overwhelming response. Something has to go right. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We get enough people to write and to make, you know, make this a federal case. I'm sure that if he's for the people, he'll do something. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, well, he's more worried about civil asset forfeiture and medical marijuana. You know, those are things that he shouldn't even be getting into. We have
you
so
have
much.
Not, you've asked not, the good book says, if you have not, because you've asked not.
That's right.
It doesn't hurt to try. It doesn't hurt, really.
No, I agree, and listen, this president we have now, and the fact that you can email and send things up in tweets is probably the most accessible guy that we've ever had. So, yeah, we can take advantage of that.
Without reprisals, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. So I agree.
I mean, it can only work in our favor. If we don't try, it's like a shot in the arm for us. If we don't try.
Right. No, I agree. I think the more noise you make, the better off you are. Look, you don't get anywhere if you don't make noise.
Absolutely.
Okay, right. Thanks for that. I appreciate it.
Right. You're doing a great work there. God bless.
Thank you. So I knocked off the last guy, and I wanted to hear what he was saying, and I don't know if he got back in again, but hopefully we get to you. I'm sorry my mouse went over it, and sometimes if you mouse over these things, they go. I don't know. Anyway, let me open up the next. We've got a few minutes. I'll try to get through these.
Yeah, turn it down.
Okay. It says Jim from New York. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going there, Gerard?
Good. What's going on?
Let me take you off speakerphone here.
Oh, I got Pennsylvania coming up next, so I'm gonna bring him in even if we're a little late because I knocked him off. But go ahead, Jim.
Go to him now. I want to hear what he wanted to say. Put me back on hold.
Okay, I'm gonna put him in and see what happens there. Go ahead.
Thank you, Gerard. Thank you, yep. Gerard. I appreciate that.
Yep.
That Dr. Thomas Rudd, he is a former coroner that has been prosecuted and is in a fight of his life right now. And John hit on something very, very key tonight. The sheriff is the supreme. He is in charge with our rights, protecting our rights and our property. But as soon as a body is introduced into any type of case, the coroner then becomes the supreme guy. He
right.
oversees everything. Now, I would love to see this guy on your show, okay? Now, the next thing, it has to do with the constitutional sheriff and this book that you guys are putting together. I was wondering if you reached out to the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association with Sheriff Mack and bring them guys on board. They've already got this material out there, and the only reason I'm bringing this up is because I know you guys have done a huge, massive mailing and faxing to all the county sheriffs here in the East Continental United States. And basically it fell upon deaf ears.
Right.
I would suggest you sending that book to the county coroners and inform and educate them so that they know that what their power is. And
yeah,
I'd love to hear this Dr. Rudd on National Liberty Alliance.
Yeah,
he could bring light to this. And if you reach out to him, I know he'll come on your show.
Well, that's a good
idea. The other
thing,
if you want to see the interview with Dr. Thomas Rudd, another awesome news agency, not even. It's an independent news guy. It's by Jason Goodman. He's from New York City. It's called Crowdsource the Truth. And
I've been watching him. I'm subscribed to his YouTube channel.
Beautiful.
Him and George Webb. I mean, it's
yes,
unbelievable.
Yes, sir. Exactly. Yeah, they are, I mean, the work that those two men are doing, and they're involving the crowd because they're exposing everything that there is out there, but they're not keeping it close to chest. Therefore, it is being put out there and keeping them alive because, in essence, they really should be dead, to be honest with you.
George Webb, for a long time, he's going, this is a proof of life video. He was making 20 videos a day. I'm still here. They haven't killed me yet. I mean, this guy is unbelievable.
Yep. Yes,
everybody should get on and watch these guys.
Yep. Jason Goodman interviewed Dr. Thomas Rude.
Oh,
there's
he did.
An interview. Yes, the persecution of Dr. Thomas Rude. I don't know. Maybe I'm saying it wrong. It's
R-U-D. No, hey, I saw that, the persecution of Thomas Rude. Somebody, I saw that video heading on YouTube or something. That's where I saw it.
That's one of Jason's, productions. Here's the other thing. You guys did an awesome interview, I think it was maybe 4 to 5 months ago, with Mike Gill. Mike Gill is still in the fight of his life against the corruption in New Hampshire, what he's dealing with up there. I don't know if you guys have been following him, but he has basically proved that Attorney Jeff Sessions is basically a dead horse for us. There is no leeway. There is no movement with Jeff Sessions. He's been co-opted. I don't know what it is, whether he was brownstoned or what. But our legal redress right now is very, very – it's shot in the ass. Let's be honest here. The work that you're thinking about doing with this county sheriff and this – I would expand it to the county coroner. And with the sheriff's papers, as opposed to, and this is just a suggestion, okay, spending $70,000 on that nice book for the sheriffs that have already been co-opted, as the last caller was saying, they're lackeys now. Do you understand? You could give them that book. They're not going to follow that rule of law. They're not going to follow it. They've been co-opted. They're lackeys of the court, of this corrupt system. If you could take that monies and team up with the constitutional sheriffs that we currently have here in this land, I think it's going to be better served for us as the people. You know, Sheriff Mack, I'm sure, I mean, Constitutional Sheriff Peace Officers Association, I'm on there right now. They got something coming up Saturday, the 21st of October, at 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's open to the public. You know what I mean? These guys are out there. Sheriff Mack has his books out, and, you know, we've gone the sheriff route with the mailings, okay? And John himself, you know, said, you know, we've been discredited. Maybe the move that was preceded was uncalculated or unthought out, or I don't even know. You know what I mean? I don't want to get mired in the details. But these guys are already out there doing the good work. They're trying to inform the sheriffs now. All right. It would be the best thing I think that we could do as National Liberty Alliance and the Crowdsource the Truth, get together, let and support these guys, and in turn educate our county coroners, the next guy in line who has the power in the county.
Right.
He can throw the feds out. He has that same power.
Right.
So how many coroners do we elect that do not know what their true power is?
Probably most of them.
Yes.
True.
Right. So, I mean, we've attacked that first ladder, you know, with the sheriffs, and we've had a minor setback. But how many times do you think the county coroner and the sheriff converse? You know, that county coroner gets that book, and he's out on a case with the sheriff and say, hey, you know what? I got this awesome book here in the mail from National Liberty Alliance explaining what my roles here are. And you know what? That sheriff's going to say, you know what? They mailed me some stuff, you know, 4 or 5 months ago. And you know what I mean? It's through repetition that you know, you might have some fruition here. So it's just something to think about.
And actually, it would be good to get them talking, like you said, because they can prepare notes.
Yes.
That'll make the juices flow. So that's a good idea. I mean, look, the coroner's only one more guy in the county.
That's
and
right.
I agree. I think we should send the coroner the book, because I do believe in there we do explain the power of the coroner. It's not as big as the sheriff, obviously, but nevertheless it states his power, and maybe that's
right.
All we need to do to get something flowing. So
and I would seriously
say,
and please reach out to Dr. Thomas Rudd. Let's try to get him on here.
Right,
he would be very informative, and I know he's very reachable. You know what I mean? Based on his interview that he did with Jason Goodman, this is another plug for the Crowdsource the Truth. If you guys aren't out there, you know, watching these guys are on the freaking ground. They're the guys that are knocking
on. Yeah, I want to repeat that for all our members, although it's late. We should do that in the beginning, that people should go on there, and they should go onto YouTube and look for Jason Goodman and George Webb.
George Webb.
I mean,
yep.
They're really, really unbelievable, the work they're doing.
Now, I don't know if you know this or not, but one of those guys that are on his program, that being Joe, he was in Vegas. He was at that festival. He was one of those 22,000 people that was fired upon down there in that festival in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And he's alive today. And it's a travesty what's going on in this country, people. We need to really become informed and educated, like John and Gerard always pound, you know. Be educated. Question everything. This is the Renaissance period again. Question all. You know what I mean? You are the authority. Don't take it for a grain of salt that the mainstream media has given you. You know, it's crap, plain and simple. You can almost guarantee when Obama would talk, you can almost guarantee that it was the opposite. You know what
exactly,
I mean? It's the same deal with this mainstream media. So I just wanted to tell you, you know, I love you guys. I love what you've been doing for years now. I've been a supporter and a contributor for a long time. And there's other avenues. There's other people out there that are doing some work, and I think they need our support.
Yeah, and I want to encourage people to go and check out Webb and Goodman, because we would be remiss not to mention them and not to put our people, because right now that's what he needs. It's the crowdsource.
Yep.
He's in the court of public opinion. Neither one of these guys should still be alive. They're hacking at the top of the top. And they got them.
They got them in
a horn dilemma with all the metadata. And I mean, he's got them 6 ways to Sunday. The last thing I watched where he said,
"And that's
well,
why
if we
we're
don't go there. We're going to go here."
Attacks. That's why we're seeing these attacks on the American people. They're pulling all the stops right now. I can see something that's going to break here. We've been chipping at the wall now for 3, 4, 5 years now.
Yeah.
They're starting to show cracks, people.
And it's not just us. It's all these other people that are out there, like Gill, like Goodman, like Webb, that are really taking chunks out, and this thing is starting to sway this tree that we've got.
Yes, it is. It's a time to be excited. This
yes,
is a time
is.
We're going to get our country back for our kids.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an old man, okay? My kids, I always said my kids will never see the America that I saw. Well, you know what? I have hope now that if we just keep plugging at this, our kids are going to have a better future than we ever even did have, because they'll have their country back, folks. And how important is that? You know, maybe, okay, I got maybe 20 years left on this earth, you know, God willing.
Mm-hmm.
But my
mm-hmm.
kids have to grow up in this. And I cannot leave them in America that is totally corrupt and just no honor. There's no honor amongst thieves. And it seems like we are overridden with them at this point. So
we can't let it fall, because if it falls, we'll never get back to where we even are right now. Even in this sixth state, we're able to have meetings. We're able to publicly do this. We won't be able to do this. It'll be impossible. So that's why now's the time. This is our last chance right now.
This is the war. The war is here.
Lose.
It is on our soil. This is the homeland war it is for the mind of the American people, and it's for the right, good, and justice that we deserve as humanity. You know, the humanity of people. 99% of the American people, I believe, are good. In our heart, the law is in our heart, as John stresses. It's in our heart. It's not complicated. Yeah. It's simple.
It's
God made it simple, because we're not too smart. You know, we get in trouble real easy. So we got to get back to that. Support these people. They're out there. They're doing the work. They're doing stuff that, like I said, they need your protection, and they need you watching them, because that's what's keeping them safe. This stuff that happened in Vegas, I mean, it's crumbling. As we speak, the narrative that they're painting is crumbling. There are people that are investigating this thing, and it's going to be exposed for what it is. And keep an eye on our president. People think he doesn't know what's going on here. He is surrounded. He is in the den of thieves. He is surrounded. Okay? Yeah. But he is a good man. I can tell in his heart. Be excited in the next couple of weeks. You might be pleasantly surprised.
And but you know, I wouldn't doubt this whole Vegas thing was because of Goodman and them putting the pressure on.
Because you're exactly right. Think. That's all you have to do. Take a little time, do a little thought process, be responsible, be Americans.
They're in the heart of the problem. They're exposing the Bushes, the Clintons, all the people that help facilitate this. And so obviously you're going to get your worst response from those devils. You know what I mean?
That's right.
And
they're going to hold on to that power. They need that power. Because like you said, the light shines, they cannot operate. Once the light shines on them, they scurry. They killed those people.
They always have their blood sacrificed, don't they?
Yep. It's crazy. They have no regard for life as humans, and it's a travesty. And, you know, I'll end on that.
Well, when Dr. they get Thomas dangerous Rupp, like this, you know that we're hitting a good, you know, that we're hitting a good spot. So
you got
on that
it.
Note, we're going to go because we're about 10 minutes over time, and it's been a good meeting. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Brad. Yep. Okay. Good night, everybody. And same time, same station next week. Thanks a lot.
That's still a lot of bullshit.
Hey, I'm not going to let you.